Marin. It's 6 past the hour on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes.
Progressive utopians with no sense of humor, but a lot of big ideas. You know, good morning, Mark Riley.
Good morning, Mark Maron.
Nice to see you, man. Good morning, Kalo on the board, Clutch Larson in the booth, P.W. McDonald on the phones, Dan Pashman, son of Lewis and Linda Pashman, out in the night.
Yeah.
Dan Pashman literally fell asleep standing up a second ago with his eyes open. It was an amazing thing. Like, we were all talking here in the studio, and I look over at Dan, whose eyes had glazed over, and he completely detached.
He's got some kind of physical thing coming up, and he couldn't eat, and he can't do this, so he ate three meals. You know, the man leads a very complex life.
Yeah, has anyone seen 380 tons of missing munitions? Has anyone seen them? Did anyone see them go?
They're on the streets of Baghdad selling for $2.50 a pop, whatever you want.
380 tons. Whoops, where'd that go, Prez? How do you not see that coming? You would think that going into a war, we're going to talk about this all day, so let me talk about
it. It's some weak. I mean, the rationale coming out of the Bush people is just so weak.
Yeah, the rationale is mind-blowing. It's right away, they're like, well, how about the stuff we did get? We got a lot of stuff.
We got 98%.
Yeah, but the stuff that you didn't get is killing American GIs. It's out on the streets, being used for car bombs. It's killing them. You would think that not only did they not have an exit strategy, clearly, Mark, they didn't have an entrance strategy. You would think, what would be the first thing? Okay, we're attacking a country. Well, what's on the five things to do list?
Get the weapons.
Secure weapons. You might want to think, and it was in the UN. The UN inspectors knew about this. It was reported. It was documented. You might want to think if there's like close to 400 tons of munitions that can be used as detonators for nuclear weapons, can be used for car bombs, that you might want to put a couple guys on that.
Look, you know, the response is so weak because now here's what they say. The Pentagon says, well, it must have happened sometime after the invasion. But then people say, wait a minute, you all were surveilling Iraq for months before the invasion. If 380 tons of stuff got moved, how did your surveillance not pick it up before the invasion if that's when it happened?
Let's be clear. The unilateral decision to go into Iraq by George Bush has succeeded in arming the enemy to the hilt.
Yes.
I mean, it almost to the point where I'm like, did they do this on purpose? Are they trying to guarantee a prolonged conflict? I mean, how do you let that get by? I don't understand. And if you read Krugman today, he basically says that, you know, this thing happened. They've known about it for 6 months. So this is just getting out now.
Yeah.
Right. They've known about it. They don't know. They're not willing. This place is called Al-Qaqa. I'm not even going to make any jokes. There's no time for plays. But it was a veritable, a veritable heap of weapons. Al-Qaqa. All right, 377 tons of deadly high explosives. Okay, the administration is trying to play down the importance of this loss, arguing that because Iraq was awash in munitions, a few hundred more tons don't make much difference. But aside from their potential use in nuclear weapons, the reason they were under seal before the war, these particular explosives, unlike standard munitions, are exactly what a terrorist needs. So this has been covered up, you know, and they were trying to push it off until the post-election.
Of course, and it's you got to figure, at this point, 380 tons of stuff that's been missing this long is now widely dispersed among, guess who? The insurgent population inside, and probably in some cases even outside of Iraq.
How could they have let that happen? I mean, I don't understand how anybody in their right mind, you know, this is the only thing this president has to run on, and he's running on a lie to begin with. But he keeps saying how he's the war president, he's the guy that's going to secure America, and they can't even secure, you know, a place where they knew munitions were. It's so suspect to me and so careless. I'd like to just rack it up. I wasn't such a conspiracy theorist, Mark. I'd just rack it up to complete incompetence.
Well, it is to some extent, and you know, when you start connecting the dots and you start looking at Zarqawi and effort, you know, the ability that this administration had to get him and that they didn't take advantage of, you see over and over and over again a startling lack of vision in terms of how this Iraq situation was going to be dealt with.
Right.
I mean, it is literally across the board. The administration knew about Zarqawi. The administration knew about these munitions. The administration has known all along about the terrorists that have now flocked to Iraq. They knew, they were told ahead of time that this might well be a byproduct of an Iraq invasion, but they went in anyway because they had a point to prove.
Yeah.
You know, what the point is, I'm not quite sure. And I don't think they know at this point.
Well, you know, the amazing thing is, and we're going to talk about Zarqawi more after the break, you know, just that we talked to Borzu Daragadi yesterday. Yeah. And, you know, and he said that, you know, that the insurgency is a very, it's complex. It's full of ex-Baathists who are bitter about being disengaged, you know, when the Americans came in. There, it's full of jihadists, as we know, and it's full of just regular, you know, bitter, you know, poor, angry Iraqi people that have had enough of the occupation because, you know, people are dying every day. He said that taxi drivers are quitting their jobs. People who drive for a living are quitting their jobs because there is so much, you know, there's so many mortars going off that no one is safe. And it becomes clear that a lot of this that's going on, that the a lot of the warfare that's taking place and a lot of the attacks on Americans is because of munitions taken from Al-Qaqa. That this is like, this was a tremendous oversight. I don't know if it was, I hate to think it was intentional because it doesn't make any sense to me. Although George Bush did say that this war was going to go on for a long time and that a state of perpetual war would certainly seal up his completely fanatically frightened base in terms of, you know, aligning themselves behind a president no matter what if they're fighting war.
You know, it's like another day, another 13, 14 Iraqis killed. Today, we now have reports at least 13 Iraqis and an Estonian soldier. Now, I didn't even know Estonia had soldiers in Iraq, but an Estonian soldier was killed yesterday. These are according to reports from around the country.
They no longer have any soldiers there if that guy was killed.
Yeah, right. A roadside bomb in western Baghdad killed a U.S. soldier, wounded five others. And see, the problem, Mark, is that in some instances when the United States retaliates for something that's a, you know, a bomb in the green zone or whatever, or when the United States takes an aggressive act, in some cases, Iraqi civilians end up being killed, and the families of those dead Iraqi civilians end up becoming instant insurgents.
Well, I was watching CNN the other day, and they were talking, they had an interesting, you know, sort of covert report. Was it CNN? I can't remember, but they were actually finding, you know, some soldiers, that, and we know there's a lot of them because we talked to them, whose morale is incredibly low, yeah. who are only fighting to protect their friends, to make sure that their unit gets through. It's not because they're patriotic. It's because it's their duty to work as a soldier and to watch their butts and watch their friends' butts.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they just, you know, he said, I don't know if I've killed any terrorists. I just know I've killed a lot of poor people. Now, the truth of the matter is that this oversight on this, you know, munitions cache,
yeah,
is that, you know, it is directly, you know, it can be directly attributed to a bad strategy that has led to more killing of Americans.
Incompetence. Gross incompetence.
And you can't counter that by saying, you know, well, we've got rid of a lot of munitions and we've destroyed a lot of them.
But see, this is a constant Bush tactic. Well, we haven't gotten Osama bin Laden, but we've gotten 75% of Al-Qaeda. Well, if you got 75% of Al-Qaeda, why is Al-Qaeda such a continuing and ongoing threat? And we know now that Zarqawi has pledged allegiance to Al-Qaeda. If you got 75% of their leadership, see, the contradictions keep coming over and over again.
Absolutely. That's like saying, yeah, 3,000 people died in the World Trade Centers, but there are still 290 million people left alive in the country.
Yeah, absolutely. The overwhelming majority.
Right. We're going to talk about Zarqawi in a minute. We'll be back on Air America Radio.
Hi, this is Al Franken, the host of the Al Franken Show on Air America Radio. For the last 6 months, we've been doing 3 hours a day of cutting-edge radio programming. We've had guests like Bill Clinton, John Kerry, and Strom Thurmond.
Yeah, Pekka! It knows no bigotry.
We've covered events like the handover of power in Iraq. We've explained difficult concepts like the growing national debt using nothing more than an ordinary slide whistle. Now we're presenting our show in a convenient, easy-to-use, one-hour version every night on Sundance Channel. Finally, you'll be able to see what we're talking about. Right, Strom?
That's right. Yippee! How do y'all see?
Tune in every night at 11:30 on Sundance Channel for the Al Franken Show. And if you don't get Sundance Channel, go to their website, sundancechannel.com. Al and Sundance Channel. Together again.
Planet Planet Check.
28% of all trees cut down are used for pulp and paper, but there is an alternative.
We do environmentally preferable papers. We make papers out of tree-free fibers, of hemp and flax, and post-consumer waste.
That's Carolyn Moran, the CEO of Living Tree Paper Company.
Still 40% of office paper ends up in landfills, so we try to use post-consumer waste to support the recycling efforts because it still has a long way to go.
And the environmental benefits?
Hemp and flax are non-wood fibers. They're annual plants, so they're very renewable.
Some major companies have gone green and made the switch.
Mitsubishi, Patagonia, The Body Shop.
The entertainment industry has also jumped on the bandwagon.
They've been doing the CD booklets for Madonna, Fleetwood Mac, Bonnie Raitt. The music industry is really great about spreading the word.
For more information on Living Tree Paper,
livingtreepaper.com.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Cliff Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at cliffbar.com.
Hi, it's Lynn Samuels. Ooh, it's that scary time of year. All the pranksters are out throwing eggs, playing tricks on each other. I get chills even thinking about it. No, I'm not talking about Halloween. I'm talking about the Republicans! And the chance that scary George W. Bush can get back in office.
Election night coverage featuring Lynn Samuels from her living room on Sirius Left 143.
How are you at hellos and goodbyes? I'm Mark Merrill with today's Family Minute. The way we greet our spouse and the way we tell them goodbye can really set the tone for the whole day or evening. So try to practice these three steps to a great hi and bye. 1. Make eye contact so they'll feel like they have your attention. Next, include some physical affection, a kiss or a hug. And finally, keep your words pleasant. It's not the time for complaints or controversy. Make your hellos and goodbyes meaningful. Remember, your family first.
The Family Minute with Mark Merrill is a production of Family First. To find out about ways you can build a stronger family, go to familyminute.net. That's familyminute.net or call 1-800-956-8300. That's 1-800-956-8300.
All right, you 4 years old son, ready for the big leagues. Stand on, buddy. There you go, helmet.
Silly head.
Okay, that's right, with thigh guards. Now don't forget your mouth guard. You don't want to be losing teeth in your first game. Well, they're baby teeth, but put it in a...
Teddy!
Don't let them worry you. They may be over 200 pounds and kind of mean looking, but you're ready for them. Just run through them. Here's the ball. Run!
Daddy?
Don't look at me. Run with it. Go, boy, run!
But I could get hurt.
No pain, no gain. Now run!
You wouldn't treat your child like an adult. So why put them in adult seatbelts? If they're under 4'9", they need a booster seat.
Ah, you should have sprayed on them.
For more information, go to boosterseat.gov. This message brought to you by the Ad Council and the U.S. Department of Transportation.
A message from the Ad Council and the National PTA. Basketball great Charles Barkley.
I got a little pop quiz for you. What do I have a hard time keeping shut? And what is my nickname? And now I got one for you. Do you know your kid's principal's nickname?
Know what really matters. Know about your kid's school. And know about your kid. Find out 100 ways to know more, do more. Visit PTA.org or call 800-307-4-PTA. A message from the Ad Council and the National PTA.
Past the hour, I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. We are going out nationwide, worldwide. People listening all over the place. We've got 7 days. 7 days before, you know, everything changes. 7 days before, you know, Kerry wins in a surprise landslide.
That's right, and I predicted it.
What's the worst that can happen? Bush is president again. That is the worst that can happen. That's not even true. The worst that can happen is actually the worst that can happen, and we don't need to go into that right now. What we do need to go into is some voter information I want to get out. If you feel like you might be the victim of voter intimidation or disenfranchisement, you can speak to a lawyer by calling the NAACP's Legal Defense Fund at 866-OUR-VOTE. To confirm your registration and polling place, call Common Cause at 866-MY-VOTE-1. That's the number one. All this stuff is on MorningSedition.com. To help get out the vote in swing states, go to MorningSedition.com's link for information. I just said that. Overseas voters who need help casting their ballots can check out the Federal Voting Assistance Program at www.fvap.gov.
Apparently, there are a lot of overseas voters who are, in fact, having problems either getting ballots or getting their ballots to the right places. So that site that you just gave is crucially important, because I know we have a lot of people who are listening to us overseas in Denmark and England and these different places around the world. We want to let you know there is help if you're having difficulty, because there are reports coming back here that many expats are having difficulty.
Yeah, everyone, there's a lot of difficulty going on all around the country. There's shenanigans already at hand. I mean, in Florida today.
Florida, Ohio, you name it, there's skullduggery going on in it.
What was that thing you're talking about, those 35,000 from Ohio?
That was from Ohio. Friday they filed legal challenges to 35,000 new voters, and because of a technical glitch in their computer run, the names and the addresses didn't correlate properly, so a good deal of those 35,000 challenges, about half of them, have been knocked out of the box.
And, you know,
that's good news.
Yeah, that's a good thing. But here, computer glitches are also possible here. I mean, 8 days before Election Day, a federal judge ruled Monday that Florida's touchscreen voting machines do not have to produce a paper record to use in case a recount becomes necessary. Imagine that. In Florida, they go ahead and let those machines. In Florida,
yeah.
A judge says it's okay to use the paperless voting machine.
That
wow.
sucks.
Go figure.
But you know what? Bob Wexler is appealing.
He's not done yet.
I mean, I don't know whether he'll get it in before the beginning of the week, the beginning of next week when the election actually takes place. But Congressman Bob Wexler of Florida is the person who actually was the catalyst for this original court case. And now he says he's not letting it die. He is going to continue to appeal to get a paper trail behind these voting machines.
Yeah, we also want to encourage anybody who goes to the polls, anybody with the time to do it, whether they are voting or they're watching other people vote, bring your video camera. Someone suggested this on the phone yesterday, and
yes.
I talked to another guy, a friend of mine, Rick, last night. He said, why not? Everyone's got one. Bring them. If there's something going on, put them on tape. Bring it. Just hold it up. You know, as you walk in, put it up to your face and walk in and let it be your eyes so you can share what you saw, what you experienced, and see if these goons that the RNC is putting in place,
and they are still putting them in place in Ohio because they had those challenges knocked out. What they'll now do is go to the polling sites, and their goal is to have people at every single polling site in the state of Ohio. Hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to Congresswoman Stephanie Tubbs Jones, who's from Cleveland, who is worried about a different problem in Ohio, and that is the fact that new voters may not have had all their information sent back to them prior to the election, so they may not know where to vote.
I can't believe this. I got a letter or an email yesterday because we were talking about the Goon Squads yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, wow, it's going to be chaos. And this woman thoughtfully, wrote me an email and said, you know, I don't think you should characterize the possibility of chaos. I mean, you know, there's a lot of possibilities for problems. But she said, if I start using words like chaos, I'm going to scare, you know, the elderly away who want to get out and vote. But if I make it sound like I do have a voice on the radio here, and despite whether I always realize that or not, I'm not saying that it's going to be chaos. I got excited. I got caught up in the moment. There's obviously possibilities for problems, but do not be discouraged to go out and vote no matter what. I mean, this is one of those things that we talked about before when they tried to float that trial balloon. What was that guy's name about the protocol for suspending the elections? You remember that cat?
DeForest. DeForest.
Well, that never really caught on. But now with the speculation that the Bush administration, you know, is raising the terror alert and that chatter is up and that there's a possibility that the elections will be interrupted by some sort of terrorist action, even that should not deter you from going to vote, to be honest with you. People voted during the Civil War. I mean, given the situation, if something horrible happens, God forbid, you know, you've got to be careful for your safety. But don't put it past this administration to allow something to sneak under the radar to, you know, suspend the elections. I've heard all sorts of chatter in the conspiratorial left out on the margins, weird email lists that I'm on that are, you know, they're saying things, you know, they've got locations, they've got places in the United States, they're talking nuclear, they're talking, you know, Ashcroft is, you know, knows about something definitely.
He's been awful quiet lately.
And, you know, given what, you know, Krugman was saying today and given the nature of the Porter Goss, you know, not allowing these names to come out about the CIA operatives who are going to be implicated in the 9/11 panel's investigation and possibly punished. They're going to hold that off till after the election. Who the hell knows? You know, what's really going on, really. And I don't want to, you know, promote fear or anything else, but there's no reason to trust this administration on any level.
I'll tell you, I have had a recurring thought, which I haven't really shared, but since you brought it up, the idea that Kerry wins a close election, but Bush refuses to concede.
Then what?
Suppose Bush says there's something, because you notice we played a tape of him yesterday where he said, well, as long as the election is free and fair and blah, 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 blah. Well, suppose he says it's not fair. Suppose he and his supporters, in the face of a clear Kerry popular victory and electoral college victory, but they cry foul.
Oh, man, I'm getting antsy, dude. I mean, like, I felt it yesterday.
I'm not trying to scare. I don't want to scare anybody because I think at this point, people are just like, come on, let's do this.
A week away from
the election, people are sick about hearing. And by the way, the media, I think, is making a serious mistake by trying to hype everybody. Every local television station in America is trying to hype its election night coverage.
Yeah.
Oh, we got the best. We got 25 people here and a half dozen people there. And
it's
blah, blah, blah.
The standoff of the century.
Let's get it done.
And this media, newspaper presidential endorsements, they keep coming out. They keep coming out for Kerry. Chicago Sun-Times endorsed Kerry. They endorsed Bush in 2000, quote, 4 years ago, this newspaper endorsed George W. Bush. We thought his administration would be about trimming the government and spending a surplus projected at $4.5 trillion. We liked Bush's vision for cutting taxes, and most of all, we saw Bush as a leader who could unite the nation. Kerry offers a different leadership style that would give us a new start internationally, an awareness of the world outside our borders, an acknowledgement that the United States is a world leader, not a rogue state, and as such, we have responsibilities to treat those who would count as friends in a certain manner. Bush has mocked this as kowtowing to France. We see it as diplomacy. That's the Chicago Sun-Times. They endorse Kerry today. One of 35 papers that endorsed Bush in 2000.
Yeah. Now Bush is trails Kerry in total endorsements, 128 for Kerry, 105 for Bush. By circulation, that's 16.9 million for Kerry versus 10.9 million for Bush. Kerry now has 35 newspapers that endorsed Bush in 2000. Bush now has four newspapers, that endorsed Al Gore 4 years ago.
And Dollcrafter magazine actually came out for Bush yesterday. Quote, we love Laura Bush's stiff, unexpressive smile and glassy eyes. Plus, she looks adorable in a red gingham jumper. Okay, I promise Zarqawi, we'll get Zarqawi. Right, Riley?
We got plane fare? No, we're going to talk about Zarqawi. We've got the president's Palm Pilot, the liberal agenda. And later this morning, Kerry's senior advisor, Joe Lockhart, joins us all on Air America Radio.
You can burn a few calories with this brain teaser from Cortislim. What do Stamford, Connecticut, Burbank, California, and the Cortislim lifestyle have in common? Here to tell us is Dr. Greg.
Well, the connection is that those cities each have a population of over 100,000 people. So, hypothetically, you might say that the entire population of, say, Abilene, Texas, not only ordered Cortislim one time, but ordered Cortislim again. And that doesn't surprise us at all, because over 100,000 reorders tells you that the Cortislim lifestyle, and that's managing everyday stress to create positive change, including your weight, along with proper diet, exercise, and Cortislim, well, it's working.
So when you hear that the number of customers who've reordered Cortislim is roughly equal to the entire population of Green Bay, ask yourself, wouldn't you be more comfortable stepping off the scale and into the Cortislim lifestyle this holiday season? It's as easy as calling 800-921-BURN, and you'll get $20 off two bottles of Cortislim. Call 800-921-BURN. That's 800-921-BURN.
It's coming down to the wire. We're just days away from completing our quest for a better America. Join us for live extended coverage on election night with the team from Sirius Left 143, Air America Radio 144, and Sirius LQ 149. All the election returns, correspondents from around the country,
and your phone calls
all night long. It's your election coverage your way.
Hey, this is Dave Ramsey, and this is your Daily Money Makeover. Are credit unions or banks better? I'll answer Suzanne's email after this.
Federal college loan rates are now at their lowest levels in history. So if you currently have high-interest student loans, it's time to refinance. Just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. With one call, you could be on your way to saving thousands. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE.
Which are better, banks or credit unions? Are credit unions better to be a part of than banks? I am a huge fan of credit unions. And in most cases, yes. The credit union is owned by the members. And so what happens is they're not-for-profit organizations. And if they make money, they pour it back into better interest rates or back into better services. And what ends up happening mainly with the credit union is this. It's like the small local bank, which is just about gone, where they actually are allowed to make decisions. Ooh, there's a concept. And where when you go in, you get treated like a human instead of a number. And then the other thing is the fact that the customers are the owners translates into just a different feel about the place. You just don't find as many nasty people when it comes to difficult situations at the credit union. We find them to be very understanding, and yes, they'll repo your car if you don't pay it, but they understand you're the customer, the owner, too, and that changes the feel of the environment.
This has been your Daily Money Makeover with best-selling author and America's most trusted source for financial straight talk, Dave Ramsey.
Research shows that the highest achieving students attend schools with good library media centers. It's easy to see why. School library media centers across the country have been helping teachers bring lessons to life with computers, videos, books, and more for years. The Campaign for America's Libraries reminds you that school library media specialists help students develop the information searching skills they need to succeed throughout their lives.
All systems ready.
Cool. Lifelong learning begins at your library.
I started hearing voices telling me, "You're dying, you're dying." I couldn't make them stop. My heart kept speeding up and slowing down. Now I feel paranoid all the time, and I can't tell what is real and what isn't. I'm on medication, but it doesn't help. Sometimes I believe I'm already dead and in hell.
Unfortunately, this 19-year-old learned that happiness and a heightened sense of touch aren't the only side effects of ecstasy. Leave ecstasy alone. To learn how or to read other real-life ecstasy tragedies, visit drugfreeamerica.org.
And we're back. Bob from Scranton, you're on the air.
Hi, Ted. Love the show. Long-time listener. First-time caller.
Thanks, Bob. Is there a special someone out there you'd like to talk about?
There is, Ted. I recently lost a very big part of my life.
You'd been together a long time?
Since college. This is for my belly, my paunch, my spare tire. I know we had some good times. God knows I'll never forget that night in Albuquerque with the burritos.
It's never easy to lose something that's been such a huge part of you, Bob. Where'd the magic go?
Well, I'd recently begun taking the stairs more and more instead of the elevator, and then we started seeing less and less of each other. One day, it was just gone.
Small step number 67. Take the stairs instead of the elevator or escalator. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to help you become a healthier, well, you. Get started at www.smallstep.gov and take a small step to get healthy.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Before past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Good morning, everyone involved.
You are not the father. Oh, sorry. I've been watching one too many Maury episodes.
Oh, my God. That's all I have to say. Ramon was supposed to be on his honeymoon, but apparently he had the... They annulled it last night.
No, that
night.
Was Borzu.
Oh, yeah, he's going on his honeymoon. But, you know, Ramon came in yesterday with the wife,
that's right.
And they're about to leave. And today he comes in. I think part of his ear was missing. And he's got bandages on his head, but he's still got us to Palm Pilot. Here's the president's schedule for today. 7:30 a.m. Wake up. Stay on message. We need $70 billion more dollars for the war. We can't pay for it anyway. What the hell? Make it $80 billion.
8:25 a.m., speak at rally on Alaska, Wisconsin. Note, blame all social problems on those fancy elitists in Milwaukee. 11:40 a.m., participate in Focus on the Economy with President Bush event, Richland Center High School, Richland Center, Wisconsin. Note, try to keep them from focusing on the economy. Who names these things? 2:55 p.m., speak at rally, Cuba City High School, Cuba City, Wisconsin. Deliver fiery anti-Castro speech to local Cubans. 4:25 p.m., speak at rally, Dubuque, Iowa.
Dubuque, yes.
Note, tell them there's no I in Dubuque, but plenty of U's. Three, in fact, impossible to spell. 7 p.m. on Air Force One, review possible replacements for Rehnquist. Note, how does this sound? Justice Limbaugh, Justice Hannity, Chief Justice Coulter. 8:45 p.m. back in Washington, use codes Rove gave me to hack into Ohio voting computers. Hey, I just won Cleveland. 10 p.m., bedtime, think happy thought. Win or lose, I'm spending next year in Crawford. All right, dude. So what were we talking about? Hey, look, I just want to say one thing. If you're going to vote for Nader because you think it sends a message, the message it sends is that you're stupid. All right, moving on.
Our little homily for the day, folks.
And I'm a huge Nader fan. Here, we're doing this every day until Election Day. Here are 10 reasons Bush must go 7 days before the election. That's today. Today's reasons all involve Iraq. Number one, he sold the war to the American people by claiming that the U.S. would be greeted in Iraq as liberators.
Number two, he intends to ask Congress for $70 billion more in Iraq war funds, pushing the total cost of the war to $225 billion, far more than the $50 billion the administration initially said it would cost.
Number three, he turned down three chances to capture terrorist Abu Musab al-Zarqawi because he feared it would undercut the case for war in Iraq.
Number four, he had members of his administration tell the American people that Saddam Hussein possessed aluminum tubes that were, quote, only suited for nuclear weapons programs, unquote, despite the fact that nuclear experts had already told them that the tubes could not be used for nuclear weapons.
Number five, he did not safeguard sites once related to Iraq's nuclear program, which led to widespread and systematic dismantling of nuclear-related equipment.
Number six, he awarded a multi-billion-dollar no-bid contract to Halliburton in Iraq. Halliburton is now under investigation for gouging American taxpayers with exorbitant bills for work in Iraq.
Number seven, he ignored plans drawn up by the Army War College and other war planning agencies, which predicted most of the worst security and infrastructure problems America faced in the early days of the Iraqi occupation.
Number eight, he disbanded the Sunni Baathist managers responsible for Iraq's water, electricity, sewer system, and all the other critical parts of the country's infrastructure.
Number nine, he told the American people that Iraq would pay for its own reconstruction with profits from Iraqi oil.
Number 10, he failed to secure a weapons site in Iraq, leading to the theft of 380 tons of deadly explosives, then attempted to cover it up.
Okay, all these will be posted on morningsedition.com. That's the 10 for today. We kept it about Iraq today because we think that this 380 tons of munitions of all sorts, were just, you know, taken from under the military's nose. They have armed the insurgency to the hilt. The Bush administration has allowed this to happen either because of its incompetence in terms of their military strategy or because they wanted to prolong the war, you know, which to me would seem crazy. But I no longer understand the rhyme or reason. And, you know, I don't know enough about what's really going on, nor does anybody in America, except for maybe two people, to make speculations. But I do know that these weapons fell into the hands of the people that are blowing up American soldiers and killing Americans, you know, on a week-to-week basis. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and thousands of Iraqis being killed by weapons that should have been secured by the military right at the beginning. They knew it was there.
Let's look at the long-term consequences of these weapons falling into the hands of the insurgency, which there is no evidence to doubt at this point. You're talking about the possibility of an insurgency without end. As long as they've got arms, as long as they've got money to purchase arms, and our Saudi friends apparently are acting as their benefactors in huge numbers, the bottom line is this is a bottomless insurgency. They don't, there really is no way at this point for the Bush administration, again, without the cooperation of the rest of the world, which doesn't appear to be forthcoming. I mean, what is the rest of the world committed primarily to training some Iraqi security people, but the minute, you know, when you start hearing about foreign nationals being killed over there, you hear about people talking about, wait a minute, we got to get our people away from all this.
And how about those 50 guys that were killed yesterday? The 50 trainees
yes.
for the Iraqi army
yes.
that were, you know, on a bus, you know, going home for Ramadan, you know, and it's like you would think that if it's our priority to show them the support that they need, to show them that we care about their efforts and that we want them to help them defend their own country, where were the escorts for these poor guys? Why weren't they armed on this road all by themselves in a bus? You know, how could something like that happen? How could I understand how there could be infiltrators in an inside job because you know, that's the way that these insurgents are working sometimes.
Yeah.
But why weren't these guys protected?
And why weren't the insurgents found before this sort of thing took place? I mean, look, it's understandable that the Iraqi security people, the Iraqi government, is hiring people as they can to fill these security posts. And in a place where a lot of other good jobs are going to foreign nationals, it leaves a lot of Iraqi young people without much choice. But, you know, folks, as we said earlier, Mark, folks are still bitter about the perception. It's not always the reality, but the perception that it is American airstrikes that are causing the greatest havoc on the ground in Iraq among ordinary Iraqis.
And, you know, and rightfully so, you know, John Kerry, you know, came out and just said yesterday that, you know, there's incredible incompetence in the war in Iraq. And that, you know, because of the disappearance of hundreds of tons of powerful explosives and the audacity and the nads of this administration, you know, Scott McClellan, all right, he gets on, you know, in the news, he said, you know, in response to 380,000 tons of munitions that were taken from Al-Qaqa, I hope I'm pronouncing it right, or it's like, I'm having a hard time.
Al-Qaqa?
Yeah, I don't know, but you know, it is what it is.
Yeah,
but
right.
The truth of the matter is that the only response McClellan had on behalf of the administration is, quote, we've destroyed more than 243,000 munitions, end quote, and also, quote, we've secured another nearly 163,000 that will be destroyed, end quote. But what about the 380,000 that were destroyed, you moron? I mean, how can that be the response to the incompetence? I mean, you would think that if you knew the arms were there, put a couple guys on it. How about five guys? How about one guy with a bazooka? Do something. Put a couple guys, you know, even if, put a couple of Iraqis on there. Do something.
They want another $70 billion early next year if Bush is reelected. They announced that yesterday.
And they're going to reinstate the draft. I don't care what he says. You know, why believe anything these guys say? It's clear that if this war goes on, and now that we've just armed the insurgents to the hilt by letting them take 380 tons of munitions from a power plant or a munitions cache that we knew was there, that, you know, we're literally arming the insurgency. So it's pretty guaranteed that the war is going to go on.
That's what, 760,000 pounds? 380 tons?
Oh my God.
A ton is 2,000 pounds, right?
I think it is.
You know, I didn't do well. Is there something about people who work morning shows that neither one of us did well in math?
Well, we can have the work done for us on the break.
Yeah, right. I think it's 760,000 pounds.
I feel like I'm cedaring, but it's okay.
Yeah, it is 760,000. People don't realize that's an incredible amount of tonnage you're talking about here.
A lot of them were nuclear detonators.
Yeah.
Look, I promised our Cowie, and I just want to tell you right now, when we come back, we're going to illustrate clearly the number of times that this president missed an opportunity to take this guy out for political reasons and also because he wanted to appease the rest of the world, something that he says he doesn't do. Yeah, the first time he missed our Cali was, you know what? Let's just wait till after the breaks. 44 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Check out all our favorite links, our latest blog entries, and our new line of merchandise at morningsedition.com.
Hi, this is Al Franken. I care about who's elected president on November 2nd, and it's never been more important who we choose for the future of America. So listen up. Right now, the polls in the Buckeye State show a deadlock, and the fact of the matter is, it's all going to come down to the ground game and who wants it more. You know, Paul Wellstone used to say that the future belongs to those who are passionate and work hard. Well, the future is in your hands, and I'm asking you to be passionate and work hard by contributing your time and money to the Ohio Democratic Party. Go to ohiodems.org. ohiodems.org. That's not hard to remember, is it? ohiodems.org. You know, sometimes we tell ourselves to save money for a rainy day. This is it. This is that rainy day. We can't let these people take this country in the wrong direction for four more years. Do yourself, your children, your country a favor. Volunteer or write a check by going to ohiodems.org.
This ad is paid for by the Ohio Democratic Party, Dennis White Chair.
I have these nightmares. This taco. Not just an ordinary taco, but this big, evil taco is haunting me. You see, I was exposed to credit cards in college, and I wasn't the most responsible person back then.
Go, go, go!
I mean, I heard the words credit card and thought, hey, hey, free money! Plane ticket to spring break? Credit card. New skis? Credit card. 135 taco dinners? Bam! Credit card. But hey, it's not too late to do something about your credit. Get Score Power from Equifax.com. Score Power gives you your credit report, credit score, and it puts you on the road toward the credit you deserve for just $14.95. So, check out Equifax.com today and get that taco you ate 7 years ago out of your life.
Get Score Power at Equifax.com or 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Adios, taco.
Get the power. Score Power at Equifax.com.
On Sirius, we strive to bring you the best that the sports world has to offer.
Warm beer, high-priced tickets, and stale popcorn?
I don't think so.
Now on Saturdays, it's College Football Day, beginning with the kickoff show at 5 a.m. Sirius College Coaches Show at 9. A doubleheader of exciting game day action. And then we finish it with the ultimate post-game show, The Wrap-Up, hosted by Jerry Recco. From dawn to dusk, Saturday is College Sports Radio Day on Sirius Sports Action 123.
Are you an out-of-control parent? I'm Mark Merrill with today's Family Minute. As a child, I can remember my dad letting me sit on his lap and steer our old station wagon on a long, deserted road. But he was always clearly in control. It was in the old days before we wore seatbelts. Well, during the early childhood years, a parent should be in control of their child, deciding when the child will sleep, what they will eat, what they will wear. But as their child grows towards adolescence, we need to steer away from being an in-control parent to being one that is out of control, letting go of the wheel, but still giving directions from the passenger seat. Remember, your family first.
The Family Minute with Mark Merrill is a production of Family First. To find some great resources for strengthening your family, go to FamilyMinute.net. That's FamilyMinute.net or call 1-800-956-8300. That's 1-800-956-8300.
Ever seen a hornet, Shelly?
No, ma'am.
Oh, well, you're five. What are you waiting for? They've built a nest outside your window. See?
No.
You will when you climb 15 feet up this ladder to get rid of them. Take this insecticide and broom and send those stinging meanies packing.
What if I fall? I could get hurt.
Oh, you know about gravity already. You're so smart. Oh, go, 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 go. The hornets are waiting.
Shoo, get away!
Oh, play with them, dear. Hornets hate high-pitched noises. Try not to swallow too many.
Get away!
Now knock that nest out of the park.
You wouldn't treat your child like an adult, so why put them in adult seatbelts? If they're under 4 foot nine, they need a booster seat.
I can't see! Are they biting me?
Oh, they're so cute. No, honey, hornets don't bite, silly. They sting.
Ow! For more information, go to boostersseat.gov. This message brought to you by the Ad Council and the U.S. Department of Transportation.
A message from the Ad Council and the National PTA. TV personality Luke Perry.
All right, I got a little pop quiz for you. It's about me. What was my zip code? What city was it in? Name three kids I hung out with in the lunchroom. Name three kids your child hangs out with in the lunchroom.
Know what really matters. Know about your kid's school. And know about your kid. Find out 100 ways to know more, do more. Visit PTA.org or call 800-307-4-PTA. A message from the Ad Council and the National PTA.
Past the hour. Mark Maron, Riley.
Hey,
I want you to hear this thing. This is Bush. You know, getting a few yucks on behalf of al-Zarqawi. Real funny stuff.
If Zarqawi and his associates were not busy fighting Iraqi and American forces in Iraq, what does Senator Kerry think they would be doing? Peaceful small business owners? running a benevolent society?
I don't know. Maybe he wouldn't be doing anything if you had taken him out when you had the opportunity to take him out four times, you disingenuous president.
Disingenuous president.
June 2002, U.S. intelligence reveals Arkawi and members of Al-Qaeda have set up a weapons lab in northern Iraq, producing deadly ricin and cyanide. The Pentagon draws up an attack plan, the White House sits on it, and it's never approved. October 2002, U.S. intelligence shows Arkawi planning to use ricin in terrorist attacks in Europe. The Pentagon draws up a second strike plan, and the White House again kills it. January 2003, police in London arrest six terror suspects and discover a white ricin lab connected to the camp in Iraq. The Pentagon draws up still another attack plan, and for the third time, the White House kills it. March 2003, U.S. attacks Zarqawi camp after Iraq invasion, but it's too late. Zarqawi is gone. Now, according to NBC, quote, military officials insist their case for attacking Zarqawi's operation was airtight, but the administration feared destroying the terrorist camp in Iraq before the war could undercut its case for a war against Saddam, end quote. So, you see, Riley, as we have said before, there was no connection between terrorism and Saddam Hussein. This was northern Iraq. It was not under Hussein's control. Zarqawi was the only operative there. They could have killed him. And now, instead, he's beheading Americans. He's killing people with the weapons that he and his people stole from this munitions cache up to 6 months ago, which was covered up by the Bush administration. You know, so he has done nothing. He is personally responsible for the death of Americans by not taking this guy out. At least Clinton had the nads to take a couple of shots at these guys, even when he was under political strain and pressure from the Republicans being run out of town because of a BJ, all right, that he still, under that kind of pressure, went ahead and tried to take out bin Laden. All right, he went ahead and took action, all right? This president does not have the guts that Bill Clinton had. And this president and his minions continue to blame Bill Clinton for Osama bin Laden. It's been 4 years, you guys. It's been 4 years. This is tired, tired stuff.
Apparently, there were folks in the National Security Council at the time these plans were drawn up. The military in particular wanted to go get this guy. And according to an article in the Wall Street Journal online, people were stunned that they submitted these proposals and then waited months and at first heard nothing from the White House. Not a word. And they figured, apparently, the folks that drew these things up figured that this was a no-brainer. That this was going to happen right away. That they had to do was submit the information. They got the bead on the guy. Now they're going back and saying, well, the intelligence wasn't quite what we thought it should have been in order to do it. But the bottom line is they were, some people, including the military and people in the National Security Council, were chomping at the bit to go after Zarqawi.
This sounds kind of familiar, doesn't it? August 6th, PDB. Dude, Osama bin Laden, Richard Clark. Hey, the guy is trouble. I mean, you know, if you're going to blame Clinton for missing Osama and not blame yourselves for realizing it was a problem, if you have the hindsight to make him accountable for missing this guy, that means you acknowledge that it's a problem and maybe you should take some responsibility. The August 6th, PDB, same thing. This guy's a problem. They're going to attack people in this country with airplanes. Yeah, I got no time for that right now. It's not a priority. Same thing. This is the same type of thinking. All these people are saying, I can't believe it. The plan was on the table. Why didn't he take this guy out? Because allowing the violence to happen, allowing the terrorism to happen, serves their agenda of holding on to power.
Yeah.
That's the sad thing. And the way they do that is by frightening American people into believing that they are doing the right thing and they are allowing this stuff to happen. I mean, this is like what you just said just made me think of this, is that, you know, it's very indicative of the August 6th PDB and these four plans drawn up. And the people that you were talking about, the national security people, it's like, we're going to go. Why aren't we going?
Why aren't we going?
I'll tell you why. Because it doesn't serve the agenda of the neocons in terms of holding on to power at the risk of American lives.
The American military has for some time felt, for example, retired General John M. Keane, who was the Army's vice chief of staff when they were considering the strike against Zarqawi, said that because this camp was located in the borderlands of northeastern Iraq, it would be easy to take out without a risk of a great deal of collateral damage. They were up for this. They felt this was a chance to either kill Zarqawi or incapacitate Zarqawi. General Keane characterized this camp as, quote, one of the best targets we ever had, and did question on the back end why the decision to attack it was never made.
Because if you get the guy, you know, the game over. I mean, these guys guarantee a game. Bin Laden out there in the world guarantees the game doesn't end. You know, this guy out in the world guarantees the game doesn't end. They can keep, you know, funneling money into their friends' coffers. They can keep this conflict up. They can keep scaring the American public, and they can continue their imperialistic goal of world domination and ultimate standoff with China. But we'll get to that later.
But see, the troubling aspect, one of the most troubling aspects of this is, number one, the sheer number and volume of people the Zarqawi has claimed credit for killing, including Americans, boggles the mind at a point. I mean, you're saying this is a guy we could have had, we didn't, and now he's running around essentially killing people with impunity. There's no, I mean, no one's talking about catching him now, are they?
Yeah.
Nobody's saying, well, we got a beat on him. He's in a camp. Now, maybe they're, you know, secretly, you know, doing some behind-the-scenes stuff. Maybe Zarqawi will be the end of October surprise, although they're running out of time for that, too. But the bottom line is that, you know, by the time the United States did figure out that they wanted to target Zarqawi, he was long gone. And the question of whether or not this administration cynically used people's lives to the end of invading Iraq is one that is, you know, only George W. Bush and his maker are going to have to deal with.
Complicity through negligence, blame dispersal. Yeah. That's what these guys do. If it's incompetence, then, you know, call it incompetence. If it is negligence that is intentional, strategic negligence is a very frightening thing because you can deny it all. They'd rather look incompetent than actually strategizing this. But what you just laid out for me, Mark Riley, and when I put it together with the PDB, the warnings about Bin Laden, all right, the missed opportunities about this, and the munitions theft, I mean, all of that to me, all that did to me, what I'm looking at right now is that there's a possibility that these guys, you know, might have known more than they admit to knowing about 9/11. There's definitely evidence that they didn't kill this guy in order to, you know, to make a case for the war in Iraq, even if there weren't WMDs there, which they knew there weren't. Mm-hmm. All right. And this third one is they, through their negligence, they are continuing to arm the insurgents.
It's a scary situation. Even Tommy Franks said that there were camps, including the one that Zarqawi was in, that Bush had vowed to crush. And he talked specifically about Zarqawi. Now, this was in a report. This wasn't in the book he wrote. And it's fascinating, too, that a CIA report on Zarqawi that was commissioned by Dick Cheney said that the U.S. missed an opportunity to take him out.
Wow, now the awkward shift to comedy. There's a liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. Make sure you write these down. We need to take a breather anyway. So we got our guest coming up. Ambassador Wendy Sherman's going to talk about this. Here's the points for the agenda. Express outrage about proposed $70 billion increase for the war when there are government-subsidized museums all over the country without any black and white bondage photos. Two, if you stole those 380 tons of explosives from Iraq, keep quiet. It's hurting Bush. Three, express concern for Justice Rehnquist, but try this out. Chief Justice Baldwin. Four, if Red Sox and Kerry win in the same week, cancel this year's New England Fall Foliage Trip. Five, today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. I'm going to vote at least four times, man, because at least one of my votes won't count, man.
In the next hour of Morning's Edition, Ambassador Wendy Sherman on those missing explosives in Iraq, Mark Maron's Dream Diary, the Presidential Daily Briefing, and Kerry's Senior Advisor Joe Lockhart, all here on Air America Radio.
Shows tropical storm just south of Louisiana coast.
At the Red Cross, just a few hours of your time helps make countless services possible. Whether you'd like to help out on the front lines or behind the scenes, there's something everyone can do to help prepare people in your community. Join the Red Cross and become part of something bigger than us all. To get involved, contact your local American Red Cross or visit www.redcross.org.
Hey, this is G-Lo, and there's one place in this country where you have all the power. One place where your voice counts, where you can make things change or make a difference. See, it's the voting booth, huh? And it only takes a few minutes to register to vote. So what's your excuse? Get all the information you need at theheadcount.org. Yeah. Your vote counts. We're serious. Check, check, check it out.
Uncensored.
Uncensored.
Uncut.
Uncut.
Satellite Fresh.
Satellite Fresh.
Serious. It's on.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. The pollsters are suggesting that you do the math. Bush, who won the support of the nation's Electoral College in 2000, could very well be cursing them out next Tuesday if he loses the White House. The pollsters say John Kerry could lose the popular vote but win the election in the Electoral College. Right now, Bush is ahead in the polls nationally, but Kerry's ahead in the battleground states. Ex-President Bill Clinton was handed the political football yesterday and took it for a touchdown and a couple of campaign stops on behalf of John Kerry. Former president who's still recuperating from open-heart surgery physically appeared to be a shadow of himself, but that in no way impeded his oratorical skills as he slammed the Bush administration and the president himself. Clinton told Florida supporters that something is definitely wrong when someone is given the evidence and still refuses to acknowledge he was wrong at any age.
The other side, they're trying to scare the undecided voters about Senator Kerry. And they're trying to scare the decided voters away from the polls. We know about that, don't we? It works so well in Florida, they seem to be trying it elsewhere.
Clinton was showered with praise at each stop. Well over 125,000 Americans showed up in Philadelphia to officially welcome Clinton back to the political scene. Former president is still being advised by his doctors not to exert himself while on the campaign trail. Administration that would have you believe it would be in the interest of all Americans to give them another 4 years has dropped the ball on one of the most important security issues of the day. Some have already begun to call the disappearance of some 380 tons of high explosives from Iraq the October surprise. 1 pound of the explosives has the ability to take out a commercial airline's jet in flight. Bush administration has no idea where the explosives are. U.S. troops have been assigned to the area where they were being housed in Iraq. John Kerry wasted no time going after Bush on the issue from Iraq regarding the issue of missing explosives. Kerry says it's yet another sign that the administration is not doing enough to protect the lives of Americans.
George W. Bush likes to talk tough, but he doesn't have a tough policy. He talks tough, and he brags about making America safer, but once again, the president has failed to deliver.
John Kerry on the campaign trail with Bill Clinton yesterday in Florida. With 7 days before the election, the presidential candidates continue to canvass the country with optimism about their respective bids for the White House. Bush remained in the West and sought to energize his support with an appearance by former New York City Mayor Rudolph Giuliani yesterday. Giuliani has been the Republican Party's poster boy for symbolizing national security because of his handling of the 9/11 attacks in New York. He continues to win praise for a job that any other mayor would have done, including that of the nation's capital at that particular time. You're listening to Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman.
It was 1979, Pittsburgh. I was 14. Me and Dad used to grill hot dogs in the backyard and listen to the ball game on the radio. This one particular night in October, it was just me and Mom's. You see, Pop played for the Pirates, and he was about to hit the longest home run I'd ever seen. Bringing him back from a 3-1 deficit and winning the last World Series of the decade. I'll never forget that moment, and this year, I'm going to share that with my kids.
The World Series is on ESPN Radio, Sirius 120.
Hey, this is Dave Ramsey, and this is your Daily Money Makeover. Jill needs help in starting an allowance program with her children. My advice after this.
Federal college loan rates are now at their lowest levels in history. So if you currently have high-interest student loans, it's time to refinance. Just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. With one call, you could be on your way to saving thousands. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE.
Jill has questions about her kids' allowances.
I have a question about children and allowance. I understand that the work equals money philosophy. How do you balance that with contributing to your household through doing chores?
Well, we do both. If we only contribute to the household just because you're a member of the family, and you should do that, you lose all the teachable moments of earned money. And that you lose the ability to give them the emotional connection between work and money, that work creates money. Mm-hmm. At our house, we have both things we do. Some things you do because I said so. But in other words, they're for the good of the family, and I just want you to do them, and I do stuff for you, and you're going to do stuff for me. And other things we do as a part of our commission program, work, get paid, don't work, don't get paid, so that they earn money, and with the earned money, they think differently about saving, about spending, and about giving.
This has been your Daily Money Makeover with best-selling author and America's most trusted source for financial straight talk, Dave Ramsey.
I heard about this company dumping toxins in local rivers, and I called their executives to say stop, but I never got through to anyone except secretary after secretary. In the meantime, the rivers are being destroyed, birds and fish are dying, and the local kids are getting sick with cancer. So I organized a huge protest, and we actually got the company shut down. And everyone starts celebrating until we realize that half the town's now unemployed. The welfare offices can barely handle the overload. People are being kicked out of their homes. And to top it all off, the rivers are still contaminated. The birds and fish are still dying. And most of the kids with cancer are twice as sick because they can't get the health care they need since their parents lost the health insurance they had when they worked for the company that dumped all the toxins in the first place.
Saving the world isn't easy, but saving a life is. And just one pint of blood can save up to 3 lives. Visit bloodsaves.com to learn more. This public service announcement was brought to you by the Ad Council.
Mark Maron, you're listening to Air America Radio at 6 past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher, kings and queens, progressive utopians with a lot of, you know, big words and explanations that they take from books in, you know, in lieu of action being taken. Welcome aboard. Everyone's invited. How are you, conservatives? Thanks for the mail. Getting a lot of conservative mail. Always good to get an email that uses the word Jew in that way that it's used. Always nice to hear
in
those
emails. In the pejorative
emails.
Sense?
Sure.
Hey, I got a message for the anti-Semite that wrote you that.
Yeah.
Bite me.
There you go. There you go. Yeah, no, it's just so funny that they start off with these arguments like, I'll take you on any time, Jew. You know, or they like, you know, or they, you
how
know,
stupid is that?
Or they blame Clinton for anything. You know, it's probably Clinton's fault that you're Jewish, Jew. Unbelievable.
What do you think this is like?
Some guy.
1930-something? What is wrong with these people?
Well, why wouldn't they think that? Have you seen the administration?
Yeah, you're right.
But the truth of the matter is, the other one that I got the other day, it's like, you know, some guy writes me, even Michael Savage criticizes Bush. Why don't you criticize Kerry? You know what? I'll do it when he's president. Okay, dummy? I'll do it when he's president. You know, you should criticize the president. You know, I'm not going to criticize Kerry right now. Kerry's our guy. Why do I want to criticize him? I think he's got a pretty damn good Senate record. I think he's doing a great job out there trying to get people to vote for him and believe in his message. I think he's doing all right. When he gets in office, then we'll take him to task day to day.
That's it.
That's all there is to it.
We ain't scared of nobody here at Morning Sedition.
Well, there's a couple people, but we're not talking to them.
But they can't get in the studio.
Yeah.
That's why we have security out front.
Unless the dude's sleeping. Here we go. What do we got going?
Oh, Lord, not that.
Yeah, well, you know, we've been talking a lot about terrorism. We've been talking a lot about these missing 380 tons.
760,000 pounds.
Oh, I'm getting that confused with how much the war costs on a day-to-day basis.
That's 225 billion.
Yeah. That's a lot of tons of weapons.
Yeah, right.
Also, you know, just about, you know, it's nice seeing Clinton out of his, out of the, you know, up and out.
Up and out, man. Turned out, Philly.
These Republican dummies, you know what I mean? They get on and they're just sort of like, they had to pull him off his sick bed because Kerry was hurting. You know what? If Clinton hadn't had a heart attack, it would have been his pleasure to be on the stump for Kerry months ago. You know, it was nice that he felt good enough to get out and do it.
Yeah.
He looked good. And, you know, this is, a, you know, President Clinton is a president with true courage and true nads, a guy that took a shot, you know, at Osama bin Laden and was then disallowed to take another shot because Republicans were dogging him. They were trying to take him down. They were trying to make it look like it was Wag the Dog. They were trying to make a fool out of him over, you know, a sexual inappropriate, you know, thing that happened. But it's the Republicans' fault. And it's the Republicans' fault that people are dying in Iraq today. All right, so moving on. Our guest is was a former ambassador appointed by Clinton. She's Kerry's foreign policy advisor. She's a principal for the Albright Group, which is an international consulting group chaired by Madeleine Albright, and it's a pleasure to have her. Good morning, Ambassador Wendy Sherman. How are you?
Good morning. Great to be with you both.
Good morning.
Well, it's nice to have you because we're all worked up here. I mean, how dangerous are these explosives?
These explosives are very dangerous. Less than 1 pound of these explosives blew up Pan Am 103 in Lockerbie and killed every single person on board many years ago. We're talking about explosives that
really could blow up every single Humvee there is in Iraq.
So how did this happen, though? I mean, it's like, what kind of oversight is this? Or is it like, you know, do they want to arm the enemy? I don't understand.
Right. It is very, very, very dangerous what's occurred here. These 380 tons, as you said, 760,000 pounds of explosives have gone missing. There's a lot of confusion this morning, a lot of mixed reports about whether they were there when we invaded, whether they weren't there. But in fact, the Iraqis just gave the report to the IAEA yesterday. Scott McClellan at the White House seemed to say, well, we're not sure what happened. We had a lot to look after. We couldn't look after everything. Stuff happens, which we've heard from Secretary Rumsfeld before. Well, you know, I lose my glasses. Sometimes I lose my car keys. But losing 380 tons of explosives, that's a little bit of a stretch.
I can't believe it. And these guys won't take responsibility for anything. They're just basically saying, hey, look, it's hard work. You know what I mean? These things get past us.
Right. It's quite extraordinary what's happened here. If they've been missing since we invaded, people should have known about it, so we could have tried to track them down and secure them. For all we know, it is exactly these explosives that have been used by the insurgents to kill and maim both American troops, the few, very few, other troops that are there, and the Iraqi citizens themselves. It's quite extraordinary.
Ambassador Sherman, why is it important when these weapons disappeared?
It's important when the weapons disappeared only in the sense of laying blame and responsibility and holding people accountable for their job. I think that if they were gone at the time we invaded, then it was our responsibility to find out where they went right away so that we could get them back and re-secure them. If they disappeared after we invaded, then it is really at the feet of the Defense Department, because the IAEA and the International Atomic Energy Agency had told the United States exactly where the secured explosives were. These were under lock and key by the IAEA, who, of course, had to leave right before the invasion. So we knew where they were. We knew where they were locked up. And the United States Defense Department, for some reason, did not protect them.
But so we're talking about a cover-up, aren't we? I mean, we're talking about something that was known and is now being released because it was leaked or had to be released, right?
Right.
Okay.
There is clearly some kind of a cover-up here, and I see in this morning's paper that when Scott McClellan said yesterday that the U.S. survey team, that's the Dulfer team that looked and finished the report for the president about whether there were any weapons of mass destruction and said there weren't, had been asked to go and find out where these explosives were, Dulfer this morning is saying, I've never received such an assignment. So there's a lot of obfuscating going on, big words, sorry. There's a lot of, you know, he did it. No, we don't know who did it. We had a lot of things to look out. There were hundreds of explosive sites. We couldn't watch over all of them. But not to watch over 380 tons of explosives is quite a stretch.
Now, you said obfuscating. Is that spelled L-Y-I-N-G?
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you, Ambassador, is there any way to track where these weapons went or where they, in fact, are now? There are a lot of people who are saying that they ended up in the hands of the very insurgents who were using them against U.S. troops. Can there ever be any hard evidence to support that allegation?
I would imagine, I don't know for sure, but I would imagine that some of the HMX, RDX, and PETN, which are the explosives, may have some markings that would allow us to track that, in fact, they came from this storage site. Nonetheless, if we see these explosives as the cause of various tragedies that take place not only in Iraq but in other places in the world, it's quite possible that they came from this storage site.
Wow, that's just it's mind blowing to me. So now, how did you talk to John Kerry? You know, after this news broke, I mean, how is he pretty worked up about it?
Well, we can see from him on the road that he is extremely worked up about it, and it really goes to a point that you made a moment ago, which is nobody's held accountable in this administration for anything.
They like to hold Clinton accountable,
right?
Yeah.
They hold Clinton accountable, or they hold Kerry accountable for things he never did or never said. But they aren't willing to hold anybody accountable. And I would bet your listeners today that no one will ever be held accountable for dismissing explosives.
Can I ask you a question about,
sure,
about President Clinton? In just the terms, because I just find it fascinating that these conservatives and also their base, who angrily blame Clinton for things now, after this president has had 4 years to correct certain things. I mean, it is my understanding that Clinton, you know, actively took some shots at Osama bin Laden and then was held back from doing anything more by the Republicans dogging him. Is that true?
Well, he did have some intelligence that said we can take a cruise missile strike at a training camp where we think Osama bin Laden is. He took that. He got enormous criticism from the Republican-controlled Congress that he was really trying to, as you said, wag the dog.
Mm-hmm.
He was trying to take attention away from other things that were going on in the administration. And, in fact, that put enormous pressure to make sure that the intelligence that he might have for a second try was absolutely positively perfect. And that extra scrutiny made it very tough. I still think President Clinton did everything he could to try to end the scourge of terrorism that we face. When Condoleezza Rice came in, I know that Sandy Berger sat
sure.
down with him, and then Madeleine Albright with Colin Powell said, terrorism, Osama bin Laden, number one. And yet it was nearly a year before this administration, the Bush administration, held a principals committee meeting on terrorism.
So it's pretty interesting that the Republicans have let Osama bin Laden, they let him go even in the Clinton administration.
Well, I suppose you could say it that way.
Well, Ambassador Sherman, it's been great talking to you. I really appreciate you
Thank
stopping
you so
by.
Much, Ambassador.
Take care, and I hope every listener goes out and votes and gets us a new president, because the world won't be safe without John Kerry in the White House.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Give us a call, 866-303-2270 with your comments, 866-303-2270, 16 past the hour. Mark and I will be here waiting.
Give us a call at 866-303-2270, or you can check us out at morningsedition.com.
You can burn a few calories with this brain teaser from Cortislim. What do Stamford, Connecticut, Burbank, California, and the Cortislim lifestyle have in common? Here to tell us is Dr. Greg.
Well, the connection is that those cities each have a population of over 100,000 people. So, hypothetically, you might say that the entire population of, say, Abilene, Texas, not only ordered Cortislim one time, but ordered Cortislim again. And that doesn't surprise us at all, because over 100,000 reorders tells you that the Cortislim lifestyle, and that's managing everyday stress to create positive change, including your weight, along with proper diet, exercise, and Cortislim, well, it's working.
So when you hear that the number of customers who've reordered Cortislim is roughly equal to the entire population of Green Bay, ask yourself, wouldn't you be more comfortable stepping off the scale and into the Cortislim lifestyle this holiday season? It's as easy as calling 800-921-BURN, and you'll get $20 off two bottles of Cortislim. Call 800-921-BURN. That's 800-921-BURN.
Dear citizens, I teach conflict resolution. Robert Lane, Yale Professor Emeritus of Political Science, says he has always been impressed by my skill and wisdom in interpersonal relations. Here's my message. We must vote to gamble less and not more with global catastrophe. As Bush roundly denies his mistakes, his lies invalidate his leadership. And as character for peace is betrayed by his stubbornness, courageous soldiers are trapped and sacrificed in inadequately conceived efforts to address the roots of terrorism. As a counselor, I encounter outrageous deception, handicapped insights, self-serving willfulness, arrogance, and misguided perceptions. And now I see those attributes linked like a chain to the unprincipled leadership of our nation. Vote for change. Refuse to be indifferent to a disaster. This is Gola Wolf Richards at Motto Citizens, MOTTOCitizens.com.
And they're coming down to the final stretch. It's Bush by a nose. Wait a minute, it's Kerry pulling out a little extra speed from the debate. Now Bush is bringing in the big guns on the war on terror. Bush, Kerry, it's anyone's race, folks.
It's down to the wire, and Sirius is here for full coverage and reaction on election night. Tune to Fox News 105, NPR Now 106, and Sirius C-SPAN Radio 113.
How are you at hellos and goodbyes? I'm Mark Merrill with today's Family Minute. The way we greet our spouse and the way we tell them goodbye can really set the tone for the whole day or evening. So try to practice these three steps to a great hi,
and buy. One, make eye contact so they'll feel like they have your attention. Next, include some physical affection, a kiss or a hug. And finally, keep your words pleasant. It's not the time for complaints or controversy. Make your hellos and goodbyes meaningful. Remember, your family first.
The Family Minute with Mark Merrill is a production of Family First. To find out about ways you can build a stronger family, go to familyminute.net. That's familyminute.net or call 1-800-956-8300. That's 1-800-956-8300.
Speak out on Sirius.
Get serious about your vote.
Yeah, this is Tom in Missouri. The Bush administration has botched everything they've gotten their hands on, and they have got to go on November 2nd. Vote for John Kerry for president.
Hello, I'm Terry Dembowski. I'm from Ohio. I'm voting for Mr. Bush. President Bush has done a fine job for us. I'm a truck driver, and many of other truck drivers like myself are voting for Mr. Bush.
This is Ron from New Jersey, and this November 2nd, I'll be voting for John Kerry. George Bush must go. Anybody that sits there for 7 minutes after they've been told that our nation is under attack is not a good leader.
This is Tracy from Indianapolis, Indiana. I'm a retired U.S. Navy veteran, so I encourage all the veterans to get out and vote for George W. Bush.
Tell us why this presidential election is important to you.
Call 1-877-33-SIRIUS and press 4.
To speak out on Sirius.
Sex, drugs, and rock and roll?
I don't know.
Peace, love, and fireworks. That's a good one. And we're talking about people losing their lives over maybe starting by popping one pill in or shooting something into your body. It's like people need to know the truth and know what they're getting themselves into. Because your mind is worth so much more than this. Me personally, I wanted the truth. You know what I mean? I want to know what's going on. This has been Nate Sally with a message from MAP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
The Republicans can let Osama bin Laden go. That's unbelievable. And arm the insurgency and create a stronger terrorist network than existed before 9/11. Unbelievable. It's 22 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
We're here on Morning Sedition. They stopped Clinton from taking action when he could take action. They ignored the August 6th PDB. They left Afghanistan. It's almost like they're trying to help the terrorists.
Ineptitude.
Yep. And guess what? Now it's time for my dream diary.
Yay!
I'm at the gym of the local high school trying to vote. Four big goons wearing Bush Cheney buttons block my path. The biggest one spits a glob of tobacco on my shoe and says, "What you doing, boy?" I say, "I'm here to vote." He says, "Yeah, we'll see about that." The other three stand behind him snickering and punching each other. He says, "What's with the carry button, city boy? He your girlfriend? You should go windsurfing together." I'm getting tired of this. And I say, "Yeah, all the time, in matching pink wetsuits. This has been fun, but I think I'll vote now." He blocks me. He says, Nah, he ain't like that, city boy. First, you gotta answer some questions before folks do any voting around here." I said, "Do I have a choice?" He said, "Sure, city boy. We can kick your ass out back, or we can kick your ass right here." I said, "I think I'll answer the questions." He says, "Okay, city boy. But to vote, you got to get two out of three right. One, you an American or a Democrat?" Democrat. He shakes his head and spits. "That's no good. You already won in the hole." The other three snickered and picked off bugs. He picked bugs off each other. He says, "Question two, what was the number on Dale Earnhardt's car?" Shoot, I don't know this one. I just pick a number. I say, three? All four shoot pissed off looks at each other. The leader said, "Lucky guess. A monkey can make a lucky guess. Here's number three, and you better get it right, or you ain't voting for squat in this gym, city boy." I said, "All right, go on. How many parts did Jackie Gleason play in Smokey and the Bandit 2? And luckily for me, in college, I wrote a master's thesis called "The Films of Jackie Gleason and Burt Reynolds and the Relationship to Myths of Southern Masculinity." Three, I say proudly, Buford T. Justice, Gaylord Justice, and Reginald Van Justice. In a rage, one of them lunges at me, but the other's holding back. The leader says, "Maynard, we gotta let him vote. He answered the questions. What kind of country we got here if we don't play by the rules?" I slipped past him, went into the booth, and quickly voted for Kerry. When I came out, all four goons were in a pile punching and biting each other. I couldn't hear exactly what they were screaming, but I'm pretty sure the next city boy who stepped into this gym wearing a Kerry button was going to get questions about Stonewall Jackson. Or maybe the Oak Ridge Boys. I woke up and my bed was filled with lemon risotto.
Huh?
There you go. So it's take some calls, man. This is going to be good. We're going to talk to the peoples.
Yes.
Is it Ben? Yes. All right, Ben, New Jersey, right?
Hey, Ben.
What's up?
Hey, good morning, fellas, man. Great show, man. Great station. Thank God you guys are on the air, man. We needed opposition to those clowns down on the dial on that conservative radio. And God bless y'all, man. Y'all do a wonderful job.
Thank you, Ben.
Listen, a couple points, right? These polls that are coming out that are all over the place, they're not reflecting the massive millions and millions of young people, African Americans like myself, that are going out, that are registering to that all registered and registered new people. I myself registered two new people, and I stay on them every week at work and say, make sure you go to the poll. This is the biggest election in my lifetime. I'm 36 years old, and they're discounting that, and they're not reflecting that. And
yeah.
I think that's going to be the major difference in this election next week. And my second point is, and then I'll let you guys talk. Please, can I have a Democrat, born and raised in New York City, now living in New Jersey, can I please have a Democrat stand up and how can I say it?
Make them accountable?
Not make this administration accountable. We know the frauds they are, but expose Rudy Giuliani and Bernard Kerik for the frauds that they are. Rudy Giuliani, who was a bigamist when he was in office, Rudy Giuliani, who had blood on his hands from the numbers of African Americans that were killed, that lived in his police state, that now everybody paints this picture of him being the mayor of America because all he did was have a dust mask on his face walking up Church Street during 9/11. Give me a break.
Yeah.
Please, can somebody expose this man for the fraud that he is?
I think you just did.
Yeah, you did a real good job there, Ben. And, of course, Rudy Giuliani is out on the stump now. Kerry has Clinton, Bush has Rudy.
Yeah.
I think there's really no comparison there in terms of stature. But, hey, Ben, your points are all very, very well taken. I think that the African-American vote, and see, here's going to be an interesting byproduct, Mark.
I think, Ben, you want a job?
Yeah, right. If young black voters come out to the polls, that will stop people from trying to intimidate some of the older black voters who may be a little bit nervous going to the polls. You know, people asking them all kinds of questions and that sort of thing. If there's some young black folks at those same polls, maybe they won't be as nervous about casting their ballot.
Yeah.
Because there'll be some people there that actually have their back.
Yeah, that'd be great. I think Ben should call. I encourage Ben to call anytime. I like the way he sets up a point.
It's
beautiful. I guess we can take one quick one before we go to break. Yeah. Jason in Queens. How are you, Jason?
What's up, Jason?
Hey, Mark and Mark. How are you guys doing?
All right, okay, man.
I got to tell you, you guys are my morning warriors against stupidity. I love you guys.
Well, thank you.
Now, let me ask you something. I've been talking to my friends and really trying to get them to see the light and really go towards an intelligent choice.
Yeah.
Now, what can we do if the worst happens November 2nd and we vote this moron back into office?
Okay, let's address that because we got to go and we'll probably address it after the break as well. What we can do is start taking action within, you know, local districts, with, you know, trying to get the Democratic poll back in the House, trying to do whatever we can on the roots of local, you know, government and trying to make that happen, really mobilizing. Or else, of course, leave the country.
Yeah. But I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think George W. Bush is going to win. I think Ben is right. I think the large numbers of young people and people of color who are going to come out to vote will mean that John Kerry wins and wins going away. And God help me if I'm wrong.
We'll take a couple calls after the break, so stay on the phone. What else we got, Riley?
Coming up, the Presidential Daily Briefing. Joe Lockhart on the final week of the presidential race and much, much more for you here on Air America Radio.
Single Air America listeners, I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Air America because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Air America listeners and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews.
What do you say, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to actually meet the other people who listen to Air America, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. DemocraticMatch.com is completely free for a limited time, so what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
Take a ghoulish ride with the ghosts of Halloween past. Each night this week on Sirius Radio Classics. Horror shows from the Fright Masters, Bela Lugosi, Boris Karloff, Vincent Price. And on Halloween Eve, it's Orson Welles' War of the Worlds. The classic War of the Worlds, Sunday at 5 p.m. Eastern. Us, the Masters of Horror, each weeknight on a special Fright Fest. All this week on Sirius Radio Classics 133.
This is Earth and Sky. According to Paul Ehrlich, professor of population studies at Stanford, humanity is on a collision course with nature.
In 1968, Ehrlich authored a book called The Population Bomb, warning that a population explosion was about to occur. There were 3.5 billion people on Earth in 1968. Now, just 36 years later, human population has surpassed 6 billion. Now, Ehrlich and other leading ecologists and economists are focused on the issue of human consumption in a finite world.
The first area that I started looking at when I got into this business was population growth, which was being ignored as a major driver of environmental problems. It's now well recognized to be a major driver of environmental problems, and we understand a lot about it, and we're doing something about population growth, whereas few people recognize consumption in the rich countries as a major driver, and nothing is being done about that. If anything, we're just encouraging more and more as we switch, for example, from just plain automobiles to SUVs in the United States, when we should be switching much more to mass transit, bicycles, and feet.
In Ehrlich's view, nature provides essential services without which our economy can't persist and humanity can't survive. Ehrlich's new book is called One with Nineveh, published this year.
Thanks today to the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation, promoting the conservation of native fish, wildlife, plants, and their habitats. We're Block and Bird for Earth and Sky.
If you think of a library as that place where shh is the only thing you hear, think again. Many are being forced to cut back hours, reduce services, even close their doors. The time to support your local library is now. Contact your library to find out how you can help keep the doors open. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. For more info, visit the American Library Association at www.ala.org.
Listen to someone just like you enjoying the Sirius Satellite Radio experience right now.
Hi, my name is Amber, and I listen to Sirius from Columbia, Missouri. I love the channel options and all that Sirius has to offer. My husband and I got it a few months ago, and we couldn't be happier. So we encourage everyone to tell their friends about Sirius.
Hi, my name is Marita Trena. I'm from Rahway, New Jersey. I tell everyone about Sirius because here in New Jersey we have no country music station, and I love to listen to new country. I love your station. I love my Sirius.
Hi, this is Andrew from Long Island, New York. I just want to let you guys know I love Sirius. Have you on, and I drive a taxi, and I have you on all the time, 12, 14 hours a day. This is just absolutely wonderful. Thanks for being there.
This is Dominique. I'd like to welcome my friend Chad Bohm to the Sirius family.
Get Sirius for your friends at Sirius.com and click on Get Sirius.
Let's be blunt about marijuana. Did you know, as many kids do, that blunt is street slang for a hollowed-out cigar filled with marijuana? Sometimes blunts contain marijuana mixed with cocaine, crack, PCP, methamphetamine, even embalming fluid. How's that for a reality check? Learn to have a blunt talk with your kids about drugs. Call 1-800-729-6686 for a free copy of Keeping America's Youth Drug-Free.
Past the hour, man. When I hear that song, it makes me happy that I have to wear headphones for a living. It feels like I just want to blast it in my head. I think I will. I'm blasting it. Yeah.
Ah, Stevie.
All right, anyways. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley. It's Morning's Edition. If you're wondering, good morning. We're going to take a call in a second. Now it's time to look at the Presidential Daily Briefing, that highly classified, top-secret document that crosses George W. Bush's desk every morning. Today's PDB from the intelligence community is entitled, Stolen Explosives Represent Last Straw. Mr. President, it's come to our attention that 380 tons of dangerous explosives are missing from Iraq. And because you're in a closely contested election, and because you're you, you're treating it like it's no big deal. But by now, we're used to this kind of thing. Let's see. You didn't catch Bin Laden. You didn't catch R. Kelly. You ignored intelligence that might have prevented 9/11. You did everything you could to block an investigation of 9/11. Then when they released the recommendations, you didn't act on them. You ignored intelligence that might have spared lives in Iraq. You had no post-war plan for Iraq whatsoever, and as a result, put thousands of our troops in harm's way. You held no cabinet members accountable for Abu Ghraib. And because you went to Iraq, the Taliban is creeping back into Afghanistan. Have we missed anything? The sad part is, we probably have. So after careful consideration, we're endorsing Kerry for president. Working for you is no fun, and you never listen to us. And you suck. Respectfully, Office of Homeland Security.
Oh, whoa.
Albert in Georgia. Albert, good morning.
Hey, Albert.
How are you doing, guys?
All right, well, how you doing?
I'm doing quite well. Great fan of the network, great fan of the show, and I wish you guys the best of luck. But me, I'm from Augusta, Georgia, and I've been wanting to call for so many mornings. I finally got through.
Yeah. Home of James Brown.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. I am black, and I'm a former Republican. When we nominated George Bush, I left the party. I'm an independent. I am backing Kerry.
All right.
Nonetheless, this is a red state. And this is what's so pitiful about some of my southern neighbors. Altogether, all red states of the South have lost almost 1 million jobs altogether, maybe 800,000 altogether.
Hmm.
And unemployment's on the rise. There are budget crises in each state that have Republican governors. And when I speak to people and I say, why, they'll say, oh, you're a Kerry fairy. So what if you want to call it that, fine.
A Kerry fairy? I've never heard of that.
And I would say, well, why are you voting for Kerry? I said, well, first of all, I believe that we need new leadership, this, that, and the other, yada, yada. Just spitting out simple facts and things that I've heard. And the first thing they say is, well, I'm not voting for him. Now, mind you, these people don't have, they rarely have, they don't have jobs. Some people are unemployed. Poverty's rising. And the first thing they can say is that Kerry flip-flops. And I listened to these people. I said, well, that's the only thing you can tell me. Why you can't vote for Kerry. And I said, you know, think about it, you know. And they said, well, we don't care about health care. People have actually told me that they weren't worried about health care. They weren't worried about these things because we won't need it if the terrorists come get us. So I would like for George W. Bush to keep doing what he's doing in Iraq to keep us safe and for and fighting for our freedom. I said the last war we fought for our freedom was on the shores of Normandy and the shores of Libya and, uh-huh. You know, and in the Pacific. That was the last war we fought for our freedom. And they said, well, no, he's fighting for our freedom. I said, well, why don't you question your president? Why don't you question our president and say, why is it okay for you to use 9/11 images on your campaign ad?
Right.
But we cannot see coffins come home.
Right.
You know, and I have an uncle buried at Arlington.
Mm-hmm.
And he served in Vietnam twice, POW twice, as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
Purple Heart, you know, Silver Star and all. And for him, I'm voting for Kerry because those are really hardworking people that have tried to make our country great and personify greatness.
Yes.
You know, and as I am making my campaign, I'm starting my campaign to run for mayor of Augusta. I'm actually only 30. And I have a group together that I go around with, and we do our research and all. And the more I come in contact with these people in my town, it almost embarrasses me because everyone watches Fox News. No one, and I mentioned Air America, oh, that's a fascist or that's a big liberal communistic radio station.
Oh, my God, they got them brainwashed.
Well, you know what it is, Albert, and I think it's important. What you brought up is important for this reason. There are numbers of people in the country who now believe that their economic status, their economic situation is now no longer their primary concern. Their question is whether or not John Kerry flip-flops, that George W. Bush keeps people safe, that George W. Bush opposes gay marriage, that George W. Bush is involved in faith-based initiatives. These are some of the issues that some people, I don't think it's a majority, but that some people use as reasons to support George W. Bush. I have a feeling at this point you're not even going to be able to change their minds.
Mr. Riley, Mr. Moran, before I let you go, gentlemen, I will say this very quickly. I asked someone the other day at work. I'm a server by occupation. I'm going to real estate school in January.
Mm-hmm.
And I was speaking to a few people at work, and I stood up in our break area, and I said, you know what? If George Bush is reelected, And somehow, some way, he finds an excuse to revoke Posse Comitatus and impose a curfew at 8 o'clock, a national curfew. I said, what would you do? Well, all I can do is support the president. I'm hoping that he makes the right decision. I said, well, you know what? I said, Benjamin Franklin once said that he who gives up safety for freedom or security deserves neither.
Yeah, that's an important point.
I'm going to vote for you, Albert. Whatever you're running for, I'm
there.
Yeah.
We'll move to Augusta.
You bet. Thanks a lot, buddy.
Thanks a lot for calling.
That was a good call.
Yeah.
Do we have time for that Clinton sound?
I think we may have just about enough time.
Is Joe Lockhart coming?
Yeah. Bill Clinton, of course, is now up from his sickbed and out with John Kerry. He was in Philadelphia addressing a crowd that some estimates put at 100,000.
Nice.
And Bill Clinton spoke to that audience in Philly about coming back.
From time to time, I have been called the comeback kid. In 8 days, John Kerry is going to make America the comeback country.
He's good, man.
Yeah,
and right after this break, we've got former White House press secretary and Kerry senior advisor Joe Lockhart. So stay with us. It's 40 past the hour on Air America Radio.
Hi, this is Mike Mills from REM, and you are listening to Mark and Mark on Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio.
Quick, who's accusing the Bush administration of high crimes and misdemeanors? Obsessive secrecy, waging war on the environment. Hint,
it's not John Kerry's party.
George Bush has become so radical that even traditional Republicans are alarmed and speaking out. In video interviews released on MotherJones.com, big-name conservatives from past Republican administrations are blasting the Bush record. Nixon counsel John Dean charges that Bush's obsessive secrecy amounts to an impeachable offense. Reagan official Clyde Prestowitz says Bush's Iraq crusade and his penchant for alienating allies has made us less safe than 4 years ago. Nixon Commerce Secretary Pete Peterson bemoans Bush's fiscal recklessness and says the ballooning deficit is almost criminal. And Nixon and four DPA directors says that Bush has declared war on the environment. Bush told us 4 years ago that he was a uniter, not a divider. Who knew he'd unite Democrats and traditional Republicans? Against him! This has been a Mother Jones Minute.
Planet Check. Planet Check.
28% of all trees cut down are used for pulp and paper, but there is an alternative.
We do environmentally preferable papers. We make papers out of tree-free fibers, of hemp and flax, and post-consumer waste.
That's Carolyn Moran, the CEO of Living Tree Paper Company.
Still 40% of office paper ends up in landfills, so we try to use post-consumer waste to support the recycling effort because it still has a long way to go.
And the environmental benefits?
Hemp and flax are non-wood fibers. They're annual plants, so they're very renewable.
Some major companies have gone green and made the switch.
Mitsubishi, Patagonia, The Body Shop.
The entertainment industry has also jumped on the bandwagon.
We've been doing the CD booklets for Madonna, Fleetwood Mac, Bonnie Raitt. The music industry is really great about spreading the word.
For more information on Living Tree Paper,
livingtreepaper.com.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Cliff Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at cliffbar.com.
Take a ghoulish ride with the ghosts of Halloween past. Each night this week on Sirius Radio Classics. Horror shows from the Fright Masters, Bela Lugosi, Boris Karloff, Vincent Price. And on Halloween Eve, it's Orson Welles' War of the Worlds. The classic War of the Worlds, Sunday at 5 p.m. Eastern. Us, the Masters of Horror, each weeknight on a special Fright Fest. All this week on Sirius Radio Classics 133.
Are you an out-of-control parent? I'm Mark Merrill with today's Family Minute. As a child, I can remember my dad letting me sit on his lap and steer our old station wagon on a long, deserted road. But he was always clearly in control. It was in the old days before we wore seatbelts. Well, during the early childhood years, a parent should be in control of their child, deciding when the child will sleep, what they will eat, and what they will wear. But as their child grows towards adolescence, we need to steer away from being an in-control parent to being one that is out of control, letting go of the wheel, but still giving directions from the passenger seat. Remember, your family first.
The Family Minute with Mark Merrill is a production of Family First. To find some great resources for strengthening your family, go to FamilyMinute.net. That's FamilyMinute.net or call 1-800-956-8300. That's 1-800-956-8300.
A pop quiz for parents.
with third grade teacher Mr. Bonner.
Today's quiz will test your general knowledge. 1. Name one Hollywood director. 2. Name one actor from a TV sitcom. Number 3. Name one comedian. 4. Name one game show host. 5. Name one professional athlete. Number 6. Name one reality TV show. And one more question worth 100 points. Name one teacher you've met visiting your kid's school.
Know what really matters. Know about your kid's school. And know about your kid. Find out 100 ways to know more, do more. Visit PTA.org or call 800-307-4-PTA. A message from the Ad Council and the National PTA. A message from the Ad Council and the National PTA. TV personality Luke Perry.
All right, I got a little pop quiz for you. It's about me. What was my zip code? What city was it in? Name 3 kids I hung out with in the lunchroom. Name 3 kids your child hangs out with in the lunchroom.
Know what really matters. Know about your kid's school. And know about your kid. Find out 100 ways to know more, do more. Visit PTA.org or call 800-307-4-PTA. A message from the Ad Council and the National PTA.
Forty-five past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley on Morning Sedition.
You!
How you doing, man?
I'm doing all right.
We're doing all right. It's been heavy, man. It's been like a powerful morning, man. It's been like a taking the president to task kind of morning, hasn't it?
Well, there's been plenty to take him to task about.
Dude, I just, like, the only thing that's going through my head now, after we talked to Ambassador Sherman, the only thing that's going through my head is that, you know, the Republicans dogged him out of taking a shot at Osama bin Laden. The Republican administration, when Bush was president, President Bush chose to not prioritize the August 6th PDB that said bin Laden would attack with planes, all right? Then we leave Afghanistan before we killed bin Laden to go to Iraq to start the free market trade zone experiment, the utopia.
Yeah.
Right? And then, like, it just seems that even when Clinton was in office, the Republicans can be taken to task for letting Osama go.
Well, I mean, we have Osama, who's been let go. We also, well, not let go, has not been captured
yet. Zarqawi.
We have Zarqawi.
Yeah.
Who had at least...
4 times.
Four times they had an opportunity to get this guy. On none of those occasions did they actually do so. And the questions about why they didn't are now starting to come to the fore, even among some people who support this president's reelection. There are questions about whether or not this administration really knew what it was doing in the run-up to the war, and certainly the questions about whether they know what they're doing now in the wake of trying to win the peace. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, that's a done deal. We know they don't know what they're doing now.
What I don't get is like, we just talked to that cat Albert from Georgia.
Yeah.
And he's telling me that he's got neighbors that really, I know that the left is propagandized, that all these guys, they watch Fox News all day long, and they really think we're part of some intricate conspiracy.
Yeah.
You know, full of lies. But how do they spin something like 380 tons of munitions disappearing? How do they spin that? How do they forgive the president for that? How can they look at that guy and say he's doing a good job?
They don't spin any of that. They don't really concern themselves with any of that. Here's what they concern themselves with. They are living in a country with a group of people that they are loath to tolerate. That would be people like us, man. People
yeah.
who believe in dissent, people who believe in, you know, comedy.
But what about
who believe
truth?
In life.
What about truth? What
truth
about just
is not the most important thing to these people.
1 + 1 doesn't equal God.
Keeping God's president is what's important to these people. And whatever they feel they have to do to accomplish that end, they are prepared to do.
Okay, well, let's go to some more source of, you know, let's join us now, but like, what kind of intro is that? Join us now by phone. He was President Clinton's press secretary from 1998-2001. He's now senior advisor to Senator John Kerry's presidential campaign. Good morning, Joe Lockhart. How are you?
Hey,
I'm
Joe.
Good. How are you guys, John?
We're
all
pretty
right.
Good. I want to play something for you that we just pulled off the TV. It's our president. I just want to play this and get your opinion on this real quick.
Final question. What the hell was that on your back? First debate.
Well, you know,
Karen Hughes and Dan Bartlett had rigged up a sound system.
You're getting in trouble.
Said your favorite. I don't know what that is. I mean, it's a. I'm embarrassed to say it's a poorly tailored shirt.
Right.
It was the shirt?
Yeah, absolutely.
There was no sound system back
there.
There was no electrical signal. There was.
I mean, what is it? How does an electric signal? Please explain to me how it works so that maybe if I were to ever debate again, I could figure it out. I guess the assumption was is that if I was straying off course, they would, kind of like a hunting dog, they would punch a buzzer and I would jerk back into place. Ah, this is absurd.
So it was a poorly tailored shirt with a remote control sewed into it.
Yeah.
What do you think of that, Joe?
That was from Good Morning America just now, Joe, about an hour ago.
Well, I've never quite thought of the president as a hunting dog, but I think it's got possibilities.
Yeah, a hunting dog as opposed to that dog won't hunt.
Exactly.
So how do you feel that Clinton is faring for Kerry? How's that impacting the Kerry fans?
Oh, okay. I mean, it was a great event yesterday. I'm told that there was 100,000 people jammed into the downtown Philadelphia. I think the president gave a good speech. John Kerry gave a good speech. Now he's off on his own. He's going to be in Florida and New Mexico, Nevada, Arkansas. So, you know, I think it's a very positive thing for us.
Mm-hmm. Joe, there have been a couple of studies recently, one by the Joint Center for Political and Economic Studies, that says that George W. Bush could double the number of black voters he gets this year from 2000. Are you buying that? And what efforts is the campaign making to speak to it?
Well, to quote what you just said, that dog won't hunt at all. you know, I think we will exceed where Al Gore was, which was 91%. I think African Americans are very well aware of how bad this president has been for their community, as well for all Americans. And I think there's, we go through this nonsense period in every campaign where the Republicans sort of trot out their outreach program and talk about how this is the election that they're actually going to make inroads into some traditional Democratic constituencies, and then it doesn't happen. It's going to happen. The same thing's going to happen this time. I expect, vote in the African-American community to be above 90%.
So let me get this straight, Joe. Does Kerry think Arkansas is in play?
Absolutely. There was a public poll out yesterday showing it at 48-48. That defines in play.
Wow. Well, that is interesting. And that was a state that Bush had pretty much claimed for his own, huh?
Well, he thought he had it. And I think the case is here is that they got a little overconfident, didn't do the work. Or our organization snuck up on them, and now it's anybody's guess.
Joe Lockhart, do you think that the story about the 380 tons of missing Iraq explosives is going to be something that will stick to the president? I know John Kerry has been very critical of what he calls the Bush administration's incompetence in allowing all this weaponry and explosives to sort of disappear. Will that dog hunt?
Well, you know, I think it will. I mean, I think it's a metaphor for the failure of the Bush Iraq policy. These guys were so intent on rushing to war before they brought the Allies along, before they'd done the planning to win the peace. They rushed into Baghdad without doing the work that even at the time the military leaders were telling them. They were telling them that we have to go slowly. We have to secure these ammunition sites. For the sake of the long-term protection of the troops. But we kept pushing ahead. We got to Baghdad. We won what now looks like a false victory because, we can tell every day that the insurgents and the terrorists that are there are well-armed, and we have to assume they've got 380 tons of high-grade weapons and explosives.
Mm-hmm. Joe, there are stories throughout the country here, particularly in Ohio, that talk about the Republican Party organizing groups of people to challenge voters, particularly new voters, at the polls. The assumption is that most of those new voters are going to be Democrats. What is the campaign prepared to do to see to it that these new voters are not disenfranchised and that each and every one of their votes are counted?
Well, I'll tell you, this is very simple for people who are new voters or people who are in communities that the Republicans traditionally try to suppress their vote. There's going to be somebody who works for the campaign at every polling site in America. We have hundreds of thousands of volunteers, and we have people who understand the legal system. So all anyone needs to know is if they get challenged at a polling site, to look for the Kerry person or the DNC person, and they will make sure that your rights are protected. The Republicans have this idea that they can bully people into not voting or not showing up. I think the only thing the public needs to know is it is your right to vote. It's your obligation to go and vote, and no one's going to stop you. You will have a friend and an ally there to take care of you. They might even have some coffee and donuts.
Are they going to have a hat or a vest designating them
Yeah, they will all be. They'll all be clearly marked. They understand the law. They understand how to deal with bullies, which is beat them with the facts. And you'll be able to vote, and your vote will be counted, unlike a lot of people last time.
Sometimes beating them when the facts gets them all aggravated and they foam at the mouth, it's annoying.
It's a pretty picture.
You shouldn't dwell on that. You certainly take that good damn Bartlett to task sometimes, though. That guy is annoying.
I think he's a good man. I think he'll do well in the private sector and be there soon.
Joe Lockhart, much was made when you and Mike McCurry and others joined the Kerry campaign. Was there one specific thing that I guess the newbies in the campaign back in late September, or I guess mid-September, was there one thing that you decided to do that has made a difference in your judgment?
Oh, I don't know. I don't think it's – I think the campaign was on the right track, and it was natural for the campaign to expand and to include old people like me and Mike near the end. We couldn't take the whole thing. That's just the young person's game.
But you're the new old, not the old.
Exactly. But the more interesting thing is why somebody like Mike or someone like myself would come back in and do this, because it is a difficult and demanding thing. And Mike and I talked about this, and our reasons are exactly the same, which is it is incredibly important. What happens in this election? There's a lot of rhetoric in politics, but this time it's not rhetoric; it's fact. The direction of this country and perhaps the world will be decided next Tuesday, and it is a very dangerous direction if George Bush gets another 4 years. It is worth doing whatever we can to try to stop that from happening.
Mm-hmm.
Joe, quick technical question: large numbers of the 18 to 24 year olds in this country who are anticipated to come out in huge numbers probably will not be able to be reached by traditional landlines with those get-out-the-vote, vote-pulling operations. You guys got some cell phone numbers? Are you reaching out to young people through the media that they patronize most frequently?
Yeah, there's been incredible work done as far as registering voters. And once you register them, you know how to reach them. They're on the voter file. The DNC has something like 175 million people on their voter file. So we know how to reach these people, even if pollsters don't. And I think it's going to be the real story of Election Day. We're not counting on all these young people turning out, but we're pretty sure they are. And I think that will, take what is a very close race to what may be, a very strong showing for John Kerry.
Well, that's very encouraging, Joe. Just quickly, Chief Justice Rehnquist is ill,
mm-hmm.
and it looks like he's very ill. How is this going to play into the campaign with, maybe two spots opening on the Supreme Court?
Well, there's certainly the next president is going to have, at least one, two, some people speculate up to four. And I think people just have to look at, what George Bush wants to do with the court and what John Kerry wants to do with the court. Now, two issues that I think are paramount. One is the woman's right to choose, and the second is the right to privacy. The Bush administration has their way. Roe v. Wade will be rolled back and repealed, and, you won't have the fundamental right of privacy in this country. So I think anyone who believes that those are rights that are important to them, you've got a chance to act on it. It's there's no complaining
right.
After the election when we get these guys, when we get these right-wing nuts on the court, and we take the country in the wrong direction if you don't get out and vote on Tuesday.
All right. Thanks, Joe Lockhart. Got to go.
Appreciate
great talking to you.
Okay, thanks.
Take care.
Wow, that was good. It was encouraging. I feel better.
Yeah, definitely.
What do we got?
In the next hour of Morning's Edition, we're going to be talking to author Esther Kaplan. We're going to be talking to more of you on the phones. Iraq, Birth of a Nation is coming up along with the Palm Pilot and the Liberal Agenda, all here on Air America Radio.
Big Brothers Big Sisters presents 100 Years of Helping Kids.
Today, Kyle and his big brother, Justin,
hello,
hi,
are here to share some stuff we've learned.
With kids, it's not always what you say, but how you say it.
Hey, Kyle, you want to go to a foreign film festival?
Nah, that's boring.
Okay.
Hey, Kyle, you want to go to a foreign film festival?
Yeah, that's a great idea.
From time to time, a kid may double dare you.
Wow, that looks heavy. Bet you can't lift it.
Are you serious?
I double dare you.
Okay.
See? I told you. Uh-oh.
Moments like these happen every day.
Making a big difference in the life of a child. To find out the many ways you can help support kids in your community, call 1-888-412-BIGS or go to BigBrothersBigSisters.org.
That's BigBrothersBigSisters.org.
This message brought to you by Big Brothers Big Sisters and the Ad Council.
Until next time.
Ben.
I am the Edison Photograph, to delight those who would have melody on.
Now, Sirius Satellite Fresh, it's on.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Kelman. Pentagon and congressional officials yesterday confirmed that the Bush administration is looking for $70 billion more in emergency funding for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan early next year. Should the administration win a second term and gets its way with Congress, the additional funding will boost the cost of the war to the tune of $225 billion since the Iraqi invasion of early last year. White House Budget Office spokesman Chad Colton says the final decisions on the supplemental aid will not be made until shortly before the request is sent to Congress. Colton adds it may not happen until early February of next year. Of course, the request will not be made at all if Bush fails to win a second term. White House acknowledges that the disappearance of 380 tons of explosives is an issue, but to hear the White House assess the situation is not a big deal. The president yesterday declined to talk about it in the campaign trail. New York Times reports surfaced at the most inopportune time for the Bush-Cheney campaign, with Election Day just seven days away. John Kerry's foreign policy advisor, Ambassador Wendy Sherman, says the disappearance under Bush's watch is a significant blunder.
These explosives are very dangerous. Less than 1 pound of these explosives blew up Pan Am 103 in Lockerbie. We're talking about explosives that really could blow up every single Humvee there is in Iraq. Yesterday, Scott McClellan at the White House seemed to say, well, we're not sure what happened. We had a lot to look after. We couldn't look after everything. Stuff happens, which we've heard from Secretary Rumsfeld before. Well, you know, I lose my glasses. Sometimes I lose my car keys. But losing 380 tons of explosives, that's a little bit of a stretch.
Ambassador Wendy Sherman, as she appeared on Air America this morning on Morning's Edition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley. All eyes are focused on the nation's high court with the surprise development just 1 week before the election that Chief Justice William Rehnquist is suffering from thyroid cancer. Nixon administration appointee underwent treatment for the disease this past weekend. Should he have to step down, the new president would have an opportunity to reshape the court. Whether this development will have an impact remains to be seen on Election Day. Federal judge has turned down a lawsuit aimed at forcing Florida authorities to affix printers to touchscreen voting machines. Despite the decision, the judge admitted that it would be better to have paper vote record. The judge, James Cohen, explained this decision, saying it was beyond his authority to order any changes, as the current system is not in violation of the law. The judge maintained plaintiffs failed to show the machines used in 15 counties did not comply with constitutional requirements for uniform standards to conduct recounts if needed. Democratic Representative Robert Wexler had sued electoral authorities, arguing that the touchscreen machines do not allow for a manual recount, while the optical scan machines used in the remaining 52 counties do. You're listening to Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman.
Jim Brewer is now on Sirius Raw Dog 147 5 days a week.
He won't leave.
And we're very excited about it.
We let him do one show as a favor.
Now you've got Brewer 5 days a week.
And he just started showing up every day.
Jim Brewer.
He brought a sleeping bag.
Monday through Friday.
Now he sleeps here.
Sirius Raw Dog 147.
That was 6 months ago.
Hey, dude.
Oh, hey, Jim. Huh, I'll see you there.
Oh, no, thanks. I'm cool. Right on. Jim Brewer. Every day, 4 p.m. Eastern, every week, forever.
Oh, God.
Starting Monday on Raw Dog.
Hey, this is Dave Ramsey, and this is your Daily Money Makeover. Suzanne's account has been debited without her permission. I'll help her fix this after this.
Federal college loan rates are now at their lowest levels in history. So if you currently have high-interest student loans, it's time to refinance. Just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. With one call, you could be on your way to saving thousands. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE.
Suzanne noticed something about her checking account.
I noticed a bank draft that was taken out for $139. I called my bank. It was a pharmacycards.com. I called the company, and she said that a pharmacy card was sent to us. We had 5 days to return it. Since we didn't return it, they debited our account.
How did they get your account?
She said, well, they must have gotten it from one of their business partners.
Well, tell her you're going to sue her for $10 million unless the money is in the account within 24 hours because you're a thief, and I'm getting ready to turn you over to the Federal Trade Commission. Jump all over them. But, yeah, I mean, you just need to jump their case and probably have the bank put a stop payment on it because of fraud.
Bank said if there's nothing they can do, they can't flag my account.
Well, tell them we're going to close your account then. Bank someplace else if you guys can't do anything about it. It needs to just be a block put on your account for this company. That's what you've got to go to.
This has been your Daily Money Makeover with best-selling author and America's most trusted source for financial straight talk, Dave Ramsey.
My dad can throw a baseball 100 million feet.
Yeah, well, my dad can throw a football 1,000 bazillion feet. That's twice as far.
So, my dad can hold his breath underwater for 5 minutes.
That's nothing. My dad can make a 360 two-handed backward slam dunk with his eyes closed.
Yeah. Well, my dad, he can make quarters come out of his nose. A whole big deal.
My dad can eat a whole jalapeno pepper in one bite.
Get out.
Yep, that's impossible. He'd explode. Boom!
Kids who spend time with their fathers are less likely to get in trouble or fail in school. Be there for your kids. Give them someone to brag about. Remember, it takes a man to be a dad.
My dad can smash a soda can with his head.
No way.
Uh-huh. I saw him do it.
Cool.
Then we took him to the hospital.
Call 1-800-790-DADS for more information. A public service message from the National Fatherhood Initiative and the Ad Council.
Mark Maron, it's 6 past the hour on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosophers, kings and queens, religious fanatics and anti-religious fanatics. Man, have we got an hour for you. Hallelujah, or... That's right. That's right. I always look forward to talking to people who are intelligent about the oncoming theocracy, if this president is reelected. The idea that we are entering into a Christo-fascist state is highly likely over a period of just one administration, easily. Considering how many stupid, misguided, frightened people there are out there and how easily led they are, it should be everyone's constant fear that the extreme religious right is slowly taking over the country. It's not some sort of empty threat. It's not some sort of strange liberal conspiracy. It is a very real possibility, and it frightens those of us who are free thinkers, secular idealists, agnostics, atheists, people who have, flights of mysticism, but not any committed spirituality, right, Riley?
Troublemakers. Yeah.
I have my moments where I get down on my knees and I ask the great unknown.
No, we can't talk about that.
I have my moments where I get down on my knees and... And that's the great unknown, what I should do next and how can I best be myself. But I'm not praying to anything in particular. I'm usually just so sad. But we are going to talk to Esther Kaplan coming up, and I'm thrilled about that. It's been quite a morning. We've been talking almost specifically about the 370 some odd tons of missing ammunition that the Bush, the neocon death cult has somehow allowed to be stolen. How do you steal 380 tons of anything without maybe a spaceship noticing? What the hell? Don't we have satellites taking pictures? Maybe you think if you were going into Iraq, hey, you guys, the United Nations says that is where there are 380 tons
of weapons,
explosives, nuclear detonators. Can we put a guy on that? You think? No, not important? All right, you're right. Yeah, let's get the oil.
The oil fields.
I mean, what is that? Maybe a satellite picture? I mean, you can see that from the sun. There was a convoy of what? How did they miss that?
Four words. Incompetence.
Or we did it on purpose because we want the war to go on for as long as possible. Lots of our friends are making money, stupid. And if we can get all the dummies in the United States to just believe narrow-mindedly and fanatically that all liberals are lying, that all Democrats are somehow conspiratorial and they're from hell, and that Jesus will take us all home, then we can do whatever we want over here because we, you know, the big fear is that Bush can end the world. And that's why so much of the fanatical Christian right is pro-Bush, is that, you know, he might end the world, and they're ready to go, people. They're trying to bring it on. I'm not being anti-Christian. I'm being anti-Christian freak.
You know, there's a thing that's cropping up more and more frequently in international conversations about the United States.
Yeah.
And it should trouble us.
Yeah.
We are being called more and more frequently, if not an out-and-out rogue state, a potentially rogue state. And a lot of people are looking at what will happen next Tuesday. And I know the right-wing fundamentalist people don't really care about this, but the rest of the world has a grave concern about what direction the United States will head after November 2nd. It's almost as great as people's concerns about where this network's going after November 2nd. But that's another story for another day. Right now, people are saying, look, this is a country that unilaterally invaded another, coalitions notwithstanding, and that there's no guarantee that America might not decide either to invade somebody else or cut and run from Iraq and watch that area and the region descend into some sort of civil war.
Or, as they call it in the Christian freak zone, the rapture, the Valley of Armageddon, where the final crap will go down, and we can all go home finally.
Home?
Yes.
Where is home?
You know.
Oh.
Up there. But, you know, needless to say, let's just look at some facts here that we've been discussing today, along with this 370-some-odd tons of munitions and nuclear weapons that have disappeared. This administration, you know, before it was even administration, these guys had this attack plan in the mid-90s, this neocon death cult, the Cheney regime. And also, we take into mind that
Predator Bush?
Yes. Well, no, let's go back. President Clinton took a shot at Osama bin Laden, would have taken more shots if the Republican House had not crippled him with a sexual, you know, suit and made it look like, you know, he was trying to wag the dog. They disabled his ability to take further shots at Osama bin Laden. So right there, that was the first time the Republicans let Osama bin Laden go. The second time was when George Bush, after they blamed Clinton for letting him go, after they disabled him from taking the actions necessary to really protect the world from 9/11, there was a PDB on his desk August 6th, Osama bin Laden's going to attack, you know, with airplanes. You know what? That's not important. All right, so that was the second time they let him go, which caused the death of 3,000 people. The third time they let him go was when they left Afghanistan. All right, so now he's still gone. And they go to Iraq to start their little project there. And what do? They leave Zarqawi alive in northern Iraq, which is outside of the Hussein's area.
Sphere of influence.
Right. Sometimes. And they leave him there to validate their war because they know there's really no WMDs there. And they let Zarqawi go four times, all right? One, Bush used the excuse because he was waiting for the coalition to decide. I thought this was a guy that didn't like coalitions, that wanted to be on his own, wanted to make his own decision. Yet he let Zarqawi go. The excuse was because he was waiting for the other countries in the coalition to decide. The truth of the matter is they let him go because they want to maintain this war. They let these weapons disappear because they want to keep this war going because it means money. But you know what? They're doing it on the death of Americans. They're doing it on the death of Iraqis. This is the neocon death cult that is being fueled by fanatical Christian fear. We're going to get into that. Right now, we're going to read the 10 reasons why Bush must go, all in relation to Iraq, because this is Iraq Day.
Yes.
Today's reasons all involve Iraq, as I said. Number one, he sold the war to the American people by claiming that the U.S. would be greeted in Iraq as liberators.
Number two, according to the Washington Post, Bush intends to ask Congress for $70 billion more in Iraq war funds, pushing the total cost of the war to $225 billion, far more than the $50 billion the administration initially said it would cost.
Number three, he turned down three chances to capture terrorist Abu Musab al-Zarqawi because he feared it would undercut the case for war in Iraq.
Number four, he had members of his administration tell the American people that Saddam Hussein possessed aluminum tubes that were, quote, only suited for nuclear weapons programs, unquote, despite the fact that nuclear experts had already told them that the tubes could not be used for nuclear weapons.
Number five, he did not safeguard sites once related to Iraq's nuclear program, which led to widespread and systematic dismantling of nuclear-related equipment.
Number six, he awarded a multi-billion-dollar no-bid contract to Halliburton in Iraq. Halliburton is now under investigation for gouging American taxpayers with exorbitant bills for work in Iraq.
Number seven, he ignored plans drawn up by the Army War College and other war planning agencies, which predicted most of the worst security and infrastructure problems America faced in the early days of the Iraqi occupation.
Number eight, he disbanded the Sunni Baathist managers responsible for Iraq's water, electricity, sewer system, and all the other critical parts of that country's infrastructure.
Number nine, he told the American people that Iraq would pay for its own reconstruction with profits from Iraqi oil.
Number ten, he failed to secure a weapons site in Iraq, leading to the theft of 380 tons of deadly high explosives, and then attempted to cover it up.
Attempted to cover it up. Blame dispersal. You know?
Blame avoidance. Under
blame
all
avoidance.
Circumstances, I did nothing wrong. Remember, this is the same guy that was, when asked to name one thing that he had done wrong. One thing! Couldn't come up with anything.
Hey, well, that's called strength. Didn't you know that, Mark Riley? That when you're unable to be contrite and you're stubborn and you refuse to change your mind even when it's been proven that you're wrong, in this country, your Bush supporters, that's called fortitude.
That's called a self-made man in love with his creator.
Yeah.
That's what that's called. This is a guy who is so arrogant that he can't figure out a single thing he's done wrong as leader of the greatest nation in the free world.
Unbelievable. And now that, Judge Rehnquist, Supreme Court Justice, Head Justice, Chief Justice, the man
William
in charge,
Rehnquist, yes.
William Rehnquist, is ill with cancer, and it's a type of cancer. It does not look good, the
thyroid.
Prognosis.
Yeah.
That means that one seat, two seats, maybe up to four seats, because a couple of the other ones are old and ailing, that these seats are open, which has tremendous implications for the country in terms of who's going to be president, come November. And also, many of the implications revolve around religious issues like Roe versus Wade and, gay marriage to some degree, but certainly the Patriot Act, but we'll definitely talk to Esther Kaplan, the writer of the author of With God on Our Side, How Christian Fundamentalists Trampled Science, Policy, and Democracy in George W. Bush's White House. She's going to be with us after the break. I'm looking forward to it. Hope you are. It's 16 past the hour. We'll be right back on Air America Radio.
Hey, want a t-shirt with me and Riley on it? Go to MorningSedition.com to check out our full line of Morning Sedition merchandise.
Hi, this is Al Franken, the host of the Al Franken Show on Air America Radio. For the last 6 months, we've been doing 3 hours a day of cutting-edge radio programming. We've had guests like Bill Clinton, John Kerry, and Strom Thurmond.
Yeah, Pekka, it knows no bigotry.
We've covered events like the handover of power in Iraq. We've explained difficult concepts like the growing national debt using nothing more than an ordinary slide whistle. Now we're presenting our show in a convenient, easy-to-use, one-hour version every night on Sundance Channel. Finally, you'll be able to see what we're talking about. Right, Strom?
That's right. Yippee! I'm going on TV.
Tune in every night at 11:30 on Sundance Channel for the Al Franken Show. And if you don't get Sundance Channel, go to their website, sundancechannel.com. Al and Sundance Channel. Together again.
Hi, do you care about the environment and America's energy future? Now there's a new way you can take action. You can fight global warming and promote energy independence with Native Energy's Wind Builders program. You can offset the impact of your energy use, your home, your business, even your car, wherever you live, work, or learn. Sign up for Wind Builders and help build new wind farms that'll reduce global warming pollution. Join thousands of individuals and leading brands like Ben & Jerry's, Clif Bar, and Aveda, and favorite bands like REM and Dave Matthews Band, who are already fighting global warming with Native Energy. Join them and help build a new Native American wind farm for just pennies a day. Click the Native Energy button on AirAmericaRadio.com or call 800-924-6826. That's 800-924-6826, or click the Native Energy button on AirAmericaRadio.com. help build a new Native American wind farm, and fight global warming with Native energy.
Serious.
Jim Brewer is now on Sirius Raw Dog 147 5 days a week.
He won't leave.
And we're very excited about it.
We let him do one show as a favor.
Now you've got Brewer 5 days a week.
And he just started showing up every day.
Jim Brewer.
He brought his sleeping bag.
Monday through Friday.
Now he sleeps here.
Sirius Raw Dog 147.
That was 6 months ago.
Hey, dude.
Oh, hey, Jim. Huh, I'll see you there.
Oh, no.
Thanks, I'm cool.
Right on. Jim Brewer. Every day, 4 p.m. Eastern, every week, forever.
Oh, God.
Starting Monday on Raw Dog.
How are you at hellos and goodbyes? I'm Mark Merrill with today's Family Minute. The way we greet our spouse and the way we tell them goodbye can really set the tone for the whole day or evening. So try to practice these three steps to a great hi and bye. 1. Make eye contact so they'll feel like they have your attention. Next, include some physical affection, a kiss or a hug. And finally, keep your words pleasant. It's not the time for complaints or controversy. Make your hellos and goodbyes meaningful. Remember, your family first.
The Family Minute with Mark Merrill is a production of Family First. To find out about ways you can build a stronger family, go to FamilyMinute.net. That's FamilyMinute.net or call 1-800-956-8300. That's 1-800-956-8300.
Learning water safety is just one way you can make your family and your community safer. Your local Red Cross also offers training in other life-saving skills, like first aid, CPR, and AED. When we come together, we become part of something bigger than us all. Sign up for a class today at your local American Red Cross chapter or visit redcross.org for more information.
Speak out on Sirius.
Call and tell us how you got a friend to get Sirius.
Hi, this is Mike Jones in Bakersfield, California. I got Sirius about 3 months ago, and I have not put a CD in my CD player since. A lot of my friends that ride with me, they've all listened to the Sirius stations that I've listened to. They love the selection, the playlist. I know two or three of my friends that have jumped over and been debating between the XM and the Sirius brand, and after listening to the stations that I listen to, they've all jumped with the Sirius brand, and I think it's one of the best things that I've invested in, and I want to thank you guys. Thanks a lot.
Hi, this is Joe in Mesa, Arizona, and I've had Sirius for over 2 years. I would like to welcome my neighbors, Brian and Becky, who got Sirius about satellite radio and hooked up with the dog. Welcome to Sirius, Brian and Becky. Thanks a lot.
Get Sirius for your friends at Sirius.com.
And click on Get Sirius.
Past the hour, I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley. You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Yes.
I've been kind of manic all morning, but in a good way, not in the weird, creepy, angry way that alienates people, I think. But then, who knows?
We still have 40 minutes left.
So, Ramon brought this in earlier, and I told you that, I don't know, I thought he was supposed to be on his honeymoon, but now he seems to have part of his ear missing. But I think he's okay. I don't know. Here's the president's schedule for today. 7:30 a.m., wake up, stay on message. We need $70 billion more for the war. We can't pay for it anyway. What the hell? Make it $80 billion. 8:25 a.m., speak at rally on Owasco, Wisconsin. Note, blame all social problems on those fancy elitists in Milwaukee. 11:40 a.m., participate in Focus on the Economy with President Bush event. Richmond Center High School, Richmond Center, Wisconsin. Note, try to keep them from focusing on the economy. Who names these things? 2:55 p.m., speak at rally, Cuba City High School, Cuba City, Wisconsin. Deliver fiery anti-Castro speech to local Cubans. 4:25 p.m., speak at rally, Dubuque, Iowa. Note, tell them there's no I in Dubuque, but plenty of U's. Three, in fact. Impossible to spell. 7 p.m. on Air Force One. Review possible replacements for Rehnquist. Note, how does this sound? Justice Limbaugh. Justice Hannity. Chief Justice Coulter. 8:45 p.m. back in Washington. Use codes Rove gave me to hack into Ohio voting computers. Hey, I just won Cleveland. 10 p.m. Bedtime. Think happy thought. Win or lose, I'm spending next year in Crawford. There you go.
Esther Kaplan is laughing. That's the laugh you don't know. With God on Their Side is the book. It's how Christian fundamentalists trampled science, policy, and democracy in George W. Bush's White House. She writes for The Nation. It's a pleasure to have you here. I'm excited. So,
I'm more excited than I can be at 8:20 in the morning.
Well, you just said something interesting about, you know, doing other radio shows and being going around the country with this book and basically telling the truth about a sort of inside the Christians on some level are being allowed and encouraged to engage in the administration and sort of take over the administration ideologically. How did this, you know, start? And it didn't sneak up, did it?
Well, the Christian Coalition as a movement has been building power since 1979 when Jerry Falwell founded that moral majority in America, which is still a minority, but they've somehow gained political power in this country. But one of the things they did is they completely took over the Republican Party. They run, I think, 44 state Republican Party committees out of 50 now.
Mm-hmm.
They're the dominant force there. So they basically own this party, even though their anti-choice political views and so on are a minority position in this country. They've kind of gotten their way into the party apparatus, and they've got a great get-out-the-vote operation. I was at a Christian Coalition conference a couple weeks ago in Washington, D.C., which, by the way, was held inside the Senate office building.
Right.
How's that for separation of church and state?
Don't they have prayer breakfasts as well, though? I mean, to bring
up,
I mean,
absolutely.
I heard in the Senate cafeteria that, you know, there's been actual religious conversions of members of the Senate in those prayer breakfasts. Do you know anything about that?
I actually don't know about the conversions, but I wouldn't doubt it. But yeah, they said they're distributing 90 million voter guides this month, the Christian Coalition.
Wow.
So, you know, they're out there doing it. And they made up 40% of every Bush voter in 2000. They're hoping to up that this time. So, you know, Bush's political career is about these folks, and he's had to do enormous amounts for them politically in Washington during the last 4 years, because he didn't just need to kind of throw them a bone the way maybe he did the NRA or something. He needed to get them so hyped up that they'd, you know, double their turnout this time.
Wow.
Esther Kaplan, this is something that's been going on for a while. It's kind of a work in progress, I think, according to some of the things you've described in your book. Talk about what area of public policy Bush's religious zealotry, I guess, for want of a better term, and the politics behind it have had the most impact.
Well, they've had a lot of impact on the hot button issues. He threw his weight behind the constitutional amendment against gay marriage, signed the partial birth abortion ban, put the international Mexico City policy, the abortion gag rule, into effect globally. But I think that where we're really running into a complete and unprecedented erosion of church-state is in the faith-based initiative. I mean, what we're seeing there, first of all, it's been challenged constitutionally in three states already and knocked down because they're basically using our taxpayer dollars to convert people to Jesus Christ.
And to Republicanism?
Well, you know.
Well, they're one and the same, don't you know?
Oh, okay, you're right.
Sorry.
You know, don't know what I was thinking.
I mean, they've looked back and figured out how Jesus registered, apparently.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, aside from that, I found out that every penny of this faith-based initiative, this, you know, soft and fuzzy embrace of faith in the public square, has gone to Christian organizations. They haven't given a dime of direct federal money to a single Jewish group, Muslim charity, nothing. So at that point, even aside from the fact that the money's being used for overtly religious activities in at least a few states, the fact that it's privileging one religion over all others really is fundamentally reorienting our government to support Christianity.
Well, you know what I was saying, what you were saying before, Riley, is that I think they are trying to recruit Republicans through the black churches.
Well, yeah, and I was going to get to that question as well, because, you know, we see Pat Robertson's getting $1.5 million over 3 years. Chuck Colson dividing up, what, $22.5 million. There's a lot of swag going on here, to use a phrase by Jay-Z. How much of it is actually trickling down to the black church, some of whose members and some of whose clergy people have backed Bush? A lot of money?
You know, a little tiny bit of money. The first director of the Office of Faith-Based Initiatives, a guy named John DiIulio, actually quit 9 months into his job because he took the job because he really thought, we're going to take federal money and bring it into the most struggling urban communities. We're going to support black churches, Latino churches who are in there turning the lives of youth around. And he quit because it had turned into a feeding trough for the Christian right.
Okay, Esther Kaplan, hold that thought. We're going to take a break. We're going to take some calls.
That's right. 866-303-2270. 866-303-2270. We've also got Iraq, Birth of a Nation, and a Liberal Agenda, and more with Esther Kaplan here on Air America Radio.
You can burn a few calories with this brain teaser from Cortislim. What do Stamford, Connecticut, Burbank, California, and the Cortislim lifestyle have in common? Here to tell us is Dr. Greg.
Well, the connection is that those cities each have a population of over 100,000 people. So, hypothetically, you might say that the entire population of, say, Abilene, Texas, not only ordered Cortislim one time, but ordered Cortislim again. And that doesn't surprise us at all, because over 100,000 reorders tells you that the Cortislim lifestyle, and that's managing everyday stress to create positive change, including your weight, along with proper diet, exercise, and Cortislim, well, it's working.
So when you hear that the number of customers who've reordered Cortislim is roughly equal to the entire population of Green Bay, ask yourself, wouldn't you be more comfortable stepping off the scale and into the Cortislim lifestyle this holiday season? It's as easy as calling 800-921-BURN, and you'll get $20 off two bottles of Cortislim. Call 800-921-BURN. That's 800-921-BURN.
Jim Brewer is now on Sirius Raw Dog 147 5 days a week.
He won't leave.
And we're very excited about it.
We let him do one show as a favor.
Now you've got Brewer 5 days a week.
And he just started showing up every day.
Jim Brewer.
He brought his sleeping bag.
Monday through Friday.
Now he sleeps here.
Sirius Raw Dog 147.
That was 6 months ago.
Hey, dude.
Oh, hey, Jim. Huh, see you there.
Oh, no, thanks. I'm cool.
Right on.
Jim Brewer. Every day, 4 p.m. Eastern, every week, forever.
Oh, God.
Starting Monday on Raw Dog.
This is Earth and Sky. More than half the world's population depend on resources that come from the mountains, such as clean water.
That's according to Bill Bowman, director of the University of Colorado's Mountain Research Station. He told us that air pollution reaches even pristine alpine areas and affects the quantity and quality of the different species living there.
One of the main reasons why there's been a lot more concern about biodiversity is that there's a realization that we're losing diversity relatively quickly. So we need to turn our attention to better understand the consequences of the loss of that biodiversity.
Bowman and colleagues organized a symposium last summer at the meeting of the Ecological Society of America.
So this symposium was organized to try to begin to relate what we know about diversity in mountain ecosystems into the functioning of those ecosystems. So we were trying to specifically relate it to things like water quality and water yield.
Bowman told us that standards set by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency aren't suited to the places he's studied in the Rocky Mountains. He wishes that new EPA standards could be set specifically for the mountains.
For more with Bill Bowman, come to earthsky.org. Thanks today to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and to the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation. We're Block and Bird for Earth and Sky.
What's up, y'all? This Jay Bug.
Yo, yo, this Raz B.
Yo, what's up? This Lil Fizz.
Yo, what up, Omarion?
And what up, B2K?
Right now, we working in the studio.
And that's a lot of work. When we go on tour, we perform live.
We have to know our dance routines, words to the songs, music.
And we have to be on point every time. Our music is pretty energetic.
I mean, it's a real hard job.
We can't look sloppy on stage.
That's why we don't have time for drugs.
You want to get somewhere?
Forget about drugs.
A message from Partnership for a Drug-Free America and MAP.
Visit drugfreeamerica.org.
Speak out on Sirius.
Get serious about your vote.
Yeah, hello, this is Daniel in Michigan. Anybody who thinks John Kerry is going to sell our sovereignty or our right for preemptive action against any enemy that threatens us is completely uninformed. Get your head out of your butt, get informed, and get to the polls and vote for John Kerry.
This is Marsha Wallace in Greenville, South Carolina, and I'd like to say that in this upcoming election, I'm going to vote for John Kerry because I value environmental protection, good health care, excellent education, judicial system, women's rights, and honesty and integrity. And I believe John Kerry represents all of those things. Please vote for John Kerry on November the 2nd.
Hi, my name's Dorothy, and I'm calling from British Columbia. Even though I'm a Canadian, I'm aware that what happens in the United States affects all of the planet. Please vote for John Kerry.
Tell us why this presidential election is important to you.
Call 1-877-33-SIRIUS and press 4.
To speak out on Sirius.
Here's an important food safety rule to keep in mind. It takes thorough cooking to kill harmful bacteria. Check your food for doneness, especially meat and poultry, with a food thermometer, because food safety is important. Don't take chances. Cooking food thoroughly is a simple way to keep you and your family healthy. Brought to you by the Partnership for Food Safety Education.
Yes, 34 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Never mind the news. Esther Kaplan may take one of Maron's cats.
Yeah, I heard that. I saw it in her eyes. She's in need of a cat. All right, buckle up. We got to do a bit. Since the handover of power, we're exploring various issues and opportunities the Iraqis and Americans will face. This is Iraq, Birth of a Nation, Day 120. Leaders of Iraq. Yes, good morning. Yes, good morning. So you may have heard, Bush is planning to ask for $70 billion more in emergency funding for the war. Don't get excited. You won't see a dime of it right away. Yes, sorry. The dough goes to the contractors, your Bechtels, your Carlyle groups. And then it does what? That's right. It trickles down. Remember those 380 tons of explosives that are gone? That trickled down, too. See? The system works. Our executives will take that $70 billion and buy lots of cool American stuff and bring it over there, like universal remote controls and TiVo. God, you're going to love TiVo. You'll never have to watch commercials again. That's right, never. And when that money trickles down and all of you get TiVos, everything's going to calm down around here. All right, except maybe for you. Did I mention that you don't ever have to watch commercials again? That's right. No, really, ever. I'm serious. Well, of course, it's compatible with digital cable. Wouldn't be much good if it weren't, would it? Okay, so as long as we're on the same page. So the good news is the money's still flowing this way, and even though most Americans wish we'd never heard of this place, I know, that's all there is to it. Okay, good luck and God bless. This is day 120 of Iraq, birth of a nation, live free or die. More bombs! Here we go. Phones. You ready, Esther? Before we
I'm
go,
ready.
I just want to ask, how close are we to the slippery slope to where, you know, everybody's, you know, got like a Ten Commandment patch over their pocket and a cross armband? And, you know, how close are we to a real sort of theocratic crystal fascist state?
Well, I think another 4 years of George Bush would bring us a lot closer. You know, the Christian right have this voter effort called We Vote Our Values, WeVoteValues.com, and they're mission statement is that it was the principles of Christianity on which this nation was founded, and it is on these principles that we should be governed today. And George Bush is their man.
Wow. So Bible over Constitution, and they're unabashed about that. Charlene in Phoenix, how are you? You got a question for Esther?
Yeah. I just wanted to know what branch, basically, of Christianity is it that is getting all this money, because I know that I'm a form of Christian, but I totally hate Bush.
Uh-huh.
So, and I haven't heard anything in the forms that I go to about that. So I was wondering, is there a particular part of the Christianity group that is getting all this, or
okay.
You know, overall?
Okay, thanks a lot. We'll ask Esther. Thank you for your call, Charlene, in Phoenix.
Well, all the cash, I assume you're talking about, and the political influence. It's what we call the white evangelical conservative movement. It's mostly Southern Baptists, Pentecostals, and other born-again Christian congregations, but specifically ones with a conservative social agenda. And it's not just going to congregations. It's going to right-to-life committees. It's going to these storefront outfits called crisis pregnancy centers, which are kind of fake health clinics that scare young women into deciding not to abort when they have an unplanned pregnancy. So it's not just going to actual religious groups. It's going to these kind of political groups affiliated with the pro-life movement and the Christian right.
Well, okay, there you go. Elmer in Atlanta. Elmer, how are you? You have a question for Esther or something you want to say? Hey, Elmer.
Hey.
What's up, buddy?
Yeah, I want to say that I can extremely identify with this situation. I have a sister that is all about this situation. She is completely believes she is Christian, that she is believes in Jesus' teachings. And I don't understand. It's like, how can these people read the Bible? I myself, I'm not so much into it, but how could they believe that what he is saying is in any way in line with what George Bush is doing?
Exactly. That's a good
question. Yeah,
thanks,
sure.
Thanks a lot, Elmer. I like that he calls it a situation, because it is a situation. And is Bush a Christian? How does it pan out? He clearly believes in something very deeply. I'm not sure what it is, but he seems fanatical to me.
Well, he certainly believes in his political future, and to do that, he has to hew to this very narrow family values agenda where they somehow have read the Bible and discovered that abortion and fighting gay marriage are the primary messages of Jesus. I'm not quite sure how they get it. Bush has completely shut the door when people have raised other ethical issues. When the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops opposed preemptive war, opposed the invasion of Iraq on religious grounds, refused to meet with them, a group of some 50 prominent Christian leaders tried to meet with them on poverty issues, sent letters, showed up in Washington, refused to meet with them. So he's not a guy that's friendly to Christians in general. I mean, that's something we need to dispel. It's specifically people with political capital within the Republican Party that get his ear.
But with a tremendous amount of brainwashed minions who are frightened enough to believe that these people are going to facilitate the rapture. I mean, they believe in this fairy tale, right?
Yeah, I mean, the polls show that a tremendous number of Americans do believe that the second coming is imminent and support Bush's foreign policy precisely because of that. They believe that invading Iraq will help bring on the second coming of Christ, that a hardline position on Israel will help bring on Armageddon. And he's feeding right into that. His rebuff of the United Nations isn't just his macho stance. I mean, you read Tim LaHaye's Left Behind series, the United Nations is a satanic institution. This is a common belief. And this constituency adores the fact that he's ridiculed the United Nations.
It's unbelievable. What's up, Riley?
Well, you know, I was just wrapped up in that We Vote Values. When she mentioned it, I had to go up and find the website. It is an incredible thing to behold. But you know what's striking about what Esther's saying here is that you look at what this administration has planned for the future versus, and I think you mentioned it, at least in one of the interviews that you did, the idea that a lot of these religious institutions were on their last leg at the end of the Clinton administration. You know, the IRS was investigating people. There were other people. There were all kinds of allegations of scandal in some of these organizations. And they really have gotten a second life from the presidency of George W. Bush. Talk about, I mean, does that imply then that if Kerry gets elected, there may be, we might get a break from all this foolishness?
Well, I think no matter who gets elected, there's an impending insurgency within the Republican Party itself. The moderates in the party are on their last bit of patience at this point, and they're getting ready to rebel, particularly the pro-choice women in the Republican Party. So that'll be an interesting thing to watch. But yeah, the Christian right movement was limping. They'd put everything into impeaching Clinton. When they lost that, they thought they'd just lost the culture war, and they were ready to just retreat into their Christian homeschools and say goodbye to politics. But George Bush has completely turned that around. So it's this kind of beautiful marriage between them where he's helped revive the movement. They got him into the White House. They owe each other. They each owe each other their political life, their political futures.
God, you know, I'm just sitting here, like, I'm just seething and horrified with fantasies of civil war in this country. Like, I'm literally thinking about how, you know, the Patriot Act could be misapplicated if, like, Christians take power. They could just start shutting things down. It could be, oh, I'm freaking out. All right, here, let's take another call. George in Fort Lauderdale.
Hey, George.
Hello, how you doing?
Good, how
are
you doing?
All right.
Listen, I am not voting for George Bush. I am a Christian. I believe the Bible says, by their works you shall know them.
Yes.
And from what I see with George Bush, he is not doing anything for the poor. He's not doing anything with love. All he's doing is stirring up people who call themselves Christian militants.
Right.
Now, my Lord says, if you're going to do anything, you got to do it with love. You got to love the believer and the non-believer.
Right.
So therefore, this Christian militant thing that this administration is doing is totally against anything that Jesus taught.
Thank you very much, George.
Interesting point. But, you know, Esther, this brings up a question because, you know, my experience has been in politics largely. I mean, obviously working in radio and journalism, but you know, focused on politics. And there's a certain cynicism that comes with that that says, you know, this guy can't be serious with all of this. This is politics. He is doing this. He's playing these people because they are, in fact, his base, that he really doesn't plan any big payoff, even if he won a second term, because he's just using them. Am I nuts?
Well, I think there's some truth to that. There's actually a piece in the New York Times this morning arguing that Bush is a lot more moderate religiously than his base. I think there's a lot of evidence for that. The guy was actually fairly pro-gay, the most pro-gay Republican president in history. Beginning of his administration, he appointed openly gay people.
Yeah.
That's never a Republican president has never done that before. He met with gay activists. You know, that's all ended because his Christian right constituency laid down the law and he stood at attention.
Yeah.
But I mean, the guy found Jesus in 1985. 6 months later, he's the evangelical wrangler for his father's presidential bid. So when you look at George Bush, you can never separate the faith, which is clearly real to some extent, from the political uses of it. It's always, always been intertwined.
One and the same.
And that's a great place to end. Esther Kaplan, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much.
Her book, With God on Their Side, How Christian Fundamentalists Trampled Science, Policy, and Democracy in George W. Bush's White House, is a must-read. If this stuff interests you, if you're Christian, if you're not Christian, you can go to our website at airamericaradio.com. You can get the book at a discount there. Thank you for being with us. It's great talking. Hang out, because I'm going to talk to you about Cat. Okay, we're going to be back with some stuff about Florida, Ohio, and what's going on in the voting world. After this, it's 45 past the hour on Air America Radio.
Hi, this is Al Frank, and I care about who's elected president on November 2nd. And it's never been more important who we choose for the future of America. So listen up. Right now, the polls in the Buckeye State show a deadlock, and the fact of the matter is, it's all going to come down to the ground game and who wants it more. You know, Paul Wellstone used to say that the future belongs to those who are passionate and work hard. Well, the future is in your hands, and I'm asking you to be passionate and work hard by contributing your time and money to the Ohio Democratic Party. Go to OhioDems.org. OhioDems.org. That's not hard to remember, is it? OhioDems.org. You know, sometimes we tell ourselves to save money for a rainy day. This is it. This is that rainy day. We can't let these people take this country in the wrong direction for 4 more years. Do yourself, your children, your country a favor. Volunteer or write a check by going to OhioDems.org.
This ad is paid for by the Ohio Democratic Party, Dennis White Chair.
Planet Check.
28% of all trees cut down are used for pulp and paper, but there is an alternative.
We do environmentally preferable papers. We make papers out of tree-free fibers, of hemp and flax, and post-consumer waste.
That's Carolyn Moran, the CEO of Living Tree Paper Company.
Still 40% of office paper ends up in landfills, so we try to use post-consumer waste to support the recycling effort because it still has a long way to go.
And the environmental benefits?
Hemp and flax are non-wood fibers. They're annual plants, so they're very renewable.
Some major companies have gone green and made the switch.
Mitsubishi, Patagonia, The Body Shop.
The entertainment industry has also jumped on the bandwagon.
They've been doing the CD booklets for Madonna, Fleetwood Mac, Bonnie Raitt. The music industry is really great about spreading the word.
For more information on Living Tree Paper,
livingtreepaper.com.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Cliff Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at cliffbar.com.
It's coming down to the wire. We're just days away from completing our quest for a better America.
join us for live extended coverage on election night with the team from Sirius Left 143, Air America Radio 144, and Sirius LQ 149. All the election returns, correspondents from around the country,
and your phone calls
all night long. It's your election coverage your way.
Are you an out-of-control parent? I'm Mark Merrill with today's Family Minute. As a child, I can remember my dad letting me sit on his lap and steer our old station wagon on a long, deserted road. But he was always clearly in control. It was in the old days before we wore seatbelts. Well, during the early childhood years, a parent should be in control of their child, deciding when the child will sleep, what they will eat, what they will wear. But as their child grows towards adolescence, we need to steer away from being an in-control parent to being one that is out of control, letting go of the wheel, but still giving directions from the passenger seat. Remember, your family first.
The Family Minute with Mark Merrill is a production of Family First. To find some great resources for strengthening your family, go to FamilyMinute.net. That's FamilyMinute.net. Or call 1-800-956-8300. That's 1-800-956-8300.
In the 2000 election, only 51% of Americans eligible to vote actually cast a ballot. 24% of Americans weren't even registered to vote at all. And until recently, I was one of them. Then a friend told me about JustVote.org, a nonprofit organization with a fast and easy way to register online. Go to JustVote.org, enter your zip code, and follow the simple instructions. You can also find your local polling place, tell a friend about JustVote.org, and donate money to help get more people registered. It's our democracy. Let's make it work. JustVote.org.
Speak out on Sirius.
Get serious about your vote.
Hi, this is Stella from Rochester, New York. I'm voting for John Kerry because the Bush administration is out of control with greed and power. While they sit around rattling their sabers and playing masters of the universe, they're sacrificing our environment, our personal freedoms, our jobs and health care, and our troops for their personal gain. And worst of all, they use September 11th as an excuse to get away with it. Bush has got to go, and he will go. Thank you.
Hi, this is Richard in New Mexico. Bush and Cheney are not Republicans. They are right-wing extremists. They have no respect for the Constitution or the democratic process. That's why on November 2nd, this Republican is voting for John Kerry.
Tell us why this presidential election is important to you.
Call 1-877-33-SIRIUS and press 4.
To speak out on Sirius.
I think I see the runway. Mark Maron, there's Mark Riley.
I'm scared of heights. I don't want to see the runway.
Close your eyes, dude, because we're taking this thing in.
Oh.
Esther Kaplan did not leave because she's sort of, I think...
She refused to leave. She's sitting in for the cat.
She's on the fence about the cat, but I think she's. I'm gonna sell it. The cat is going to be yours soon, one of these cats.
Better your house than my house. Thank you.
But more importantly, she was about to give us some information as she was walking out. Oh, by the way, here's something really important you should say, but I'm leaving. Maybe you could do it. And we said, no! Stay.
Freeze!
Tell us. Give us that information.
Well, I just... When I read about Rehnquist's health troubles,
mm-hmm.
and of course we wish him the very best, but I was reminded of Pat Robertson's prayer offensive, which he called Operation Supreme Court Freedom, which he kicked off in the wake of that traumatic Supreme Court decision for the Christian right, the Lawrence v. Texas, which legalized sodomy. He kicked off at that point a 21-day prayer offensive on his 700 Club show, basically calling for people to pray for deaths on the Supreme Court so Bush would have the chance to appoint pure ideologues. He was targeting John Paul Stevens and Ruth Bader Ginsburg, but, you know,
so
maybe
guess,
the...
Yeah, God's aim is not as good as we might have thought it would have been.
Well, actually, Stevens has prostate cancer, Ginsburg has colon cancer. But they have at one time had those two cancers. But what kind of person... It would invoke religion to call for the deaths of other people. I mean, that sounds like a Zarqawi thing.
well, these people are fairly similar in their commitment, just a different religion. I mean, some people call these guys the Christian Taliban. We talked to a cat who wrote a piece about that. I forget his name. Chris Rizzo, I think. I can't remember. Of course, I don't remember. And I hate when I do that. No, I'll just speculate. But thank you again, Esther Kaplan. It's great to see you. And
you know, we appreciate
and,
it.
And you're going to be the proud owner of a wild cat.
We'll talk cat.
I'll email you. There she goes. Adios. Yes.
So you'll never see her again, and she's not touching your cat.
Oh no, I'm
only kidding. I'm considering it.
I'm going to guilt her about the cat. I'm going to write her email saying it's just sitting here looking at me, wondering who's going to own me. I need help.
I hope she's good with a computer, so she knows how to do block all emails from Mark Maron.
This guy's obsessive. Why does he keep emailing me about this cat?
Can you imagine the nerve of somebody praying for in asking other people? If you want to pray for somebody's death, that's on you. That's between you and your maker. But to ask other people, other people over whom you have influence, to pray for the deaths of people on the United States Supreme Court is an abomination.
It's a misuse of prayer, and it's anti-Christian, and it's evil.
It is.
And you know, just that in and of itself, like our caller said, you know, that you know these are not Christian acts. I mean, to pray for somebody, to be harmed is not prayer at all. It is vengeful, evil thinking. And, you know, certainly Pat Robertson, you know, is not the beacon of Christian clarity. You know, none of these guys
are. He's an ugly man.
Yeah.
Ugly.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that.
And the Republicans also not so attractive. As we are seeing, there's some muscles being flexed down in Florida.
Down in Florida, a federal judge. This is not a local guy. This is federal. This is a federal hitter. Ruled yesterday that the touchscreen voting machines do not have to produce a paper record. Congressman Robert Wexler of Florida had sought either a paper record or an order switching voters in 15 counties from touchscreens to optically scanned paper ballots by 2006. The decision was essentially saying that the machines, quote, provide sufficient safeguards by warning voters if they do not cast a vote in a particular race and by allowing them to give their ballots a final review. Wexler says he will, in fact, appeal. But, Mark, that's only one of a number of different court cases that Republicans have won with regard to, voter access.
Yeah.
There have been some cases in Ohio, as we mentioned earlier. There's a case in Michigan as well where it appears as though the Republicans, who make no mistake about this, are seeking to be as exclusionary as possible in this voting process.
Yep.
They want as few people to vote as possible. They want to knock as many people out of the voting process as is possible. That's why they would come to Illinois and challenge 36,000 voters, although that now seems to be on the back burner.
Well, you know, these are problems that exist. They're real. Joe Lockhart said there will be, you know, a representative of the Democratic Party at every polling place who will be identified if you are being bullied or bothered or put on the spot by people intimidating you or interrogating your ability to vote. If you sense anything is going on now that seems not right, you can call 866-OUR-VOTE, and there should be a lawyer there to help you. If you want to confirm your registration and polling place, call Common Cause at 866-MY-VOTE-1.
That's going to be very, very important because there are a number of court decisions recently in Ohio, in Michigan, Colorado, Florida, and Missouri where judges are saying that in order for your vote to count, you must vote in the proper precinct rather than in a county or a jurisdiction. So if you don't know, if you are in any way, shape, or form not clear about the precinct you're supposed to be voting in, call that number, get it in advance. And if you end up at the wrong place or if somebody tells you you're in the wrong precinct, there will be people on site who will hopefully be able to guide you to the right place.
And, you know, do it, folks. It's about numbers. You heard Esther Kaplan. We're up against a huge contingent of narrow-minded, frightened people with belief systems that stand in the face of science, reason, and anything practical. They are, you know, they are fake Christians who are not behaving in a Christian way, and they want to take over this country and end the world.
And, you know, they started down the road. This Iraq invasion, you know, Marin, years after we're dust, people are going to look back on this and say, what were they thinking? What were these people thinking that conducted this war?
That'll be like some weird sub-story in a large book of, you know, like, this is how the Christians ended liberal radio. Morning show.
Yeah, right?
Well, there's the liberal agenda.
Uh-oh.
Thank God we found a laugh to transition. I get a little heavy sometimes with this stuff. Again, not making fun of Christians, making fun of the ones, you know, who the ones are.
But that's all right. We're going to win.
Yes. Here we go. Liberal agenda. One, express outrage about proposed $70 billion increase for the war when there are government-subsidized museums all over the country without any black and white bondage photos. Two, if you stole those 380 tons of explosives from Iraq, keep quiet. It's hurting Bush. Three, express concern for Justice Rehnquist. But try this out. Chief Justice Baldwin. Four, if Red Sox and Kerry win in the same week, cancel this year's New England fall foliage trip. And five, today's phrase, just drop it into conversation, quote, I'm going to vote at least four times, man, because at least one of my votes won't count. Man, what do we got tomorrow there, Riley?
Coming up on tomorrow's morning's edition, Congresswoman Corrine Brown, our good friend, talks about the election and her home state of Florida, where there are much shenanigans going on. And Jim Moore, author of Bush's Brain and expert on all things Texas politics, will talk about Bush, Tom DeLay, and much, much more tomorrow for you here on Air America Radio. Have a good one, Marin.
You too.